on Nick's show as I come in to prepare to introduce mine, but that speaks directly to what I've been thinking for much but not all of this morning, which is about the different tiers of public discourse. You've got traditional media, newspapers, people like us, and then you've got modern, ultra-modern social media, an increasingly fractious and difficult place. But then you've got real people. People like that caller, people who are having conversations in their own lives and their own families that somehow seem very separated today from the mainstream chatter. How do we bridge those gaps?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, two men killed in the terror attack at a synagogue in Manchester have been named as Adrian Dolby and Melvin Kravitz. They were killed by Jihad al-Shami, a 35-year-old British citizen of Syrian descent who carried out the car and stabbing attack yesterday. Israel's president says it shows the need for very strong steps to tackle anti-Semitism in Britain. Isaac Herzog's been speaking to LBC.
It's a shocking reminder of what we've been alerting on for quite some time, that this heat wave of anti-Semitism and anti-Jewish feelings all over the world at the end reaches bloodshed.
The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, has described pro-Palestinian marches held last night as dishonourable and fundamentally un-British. The Metropolitan Police has urged organisers to cancel a rally in support of the band group Palestine Action tomorrow. It says officers are needed to provide security cover in communities across London. The protest group Defend Our Juries says it is planning to go ahead, but Ms Mahmood has called for a rethink.
They're not listening, and I'm very disappointed. I don't think they do their cause any favours by behaving in this way. If the point of protest is to, you know, stand up for something and persuade other people that you are right, then I think this is entirely the wrong way to go about it. But that is on their conscience.
In the last few minutes, the King has approved the nomination of Sarah Mullally as the next Archbishop of Canterbury. The Church of England has been without anyone in the top job for almost a year after Justin Welby resigned over a safeguarding scandal. The Green Party leader, Zach Polanski, is to accuse Labour of being too strongly influenced by Reform UK. He will make his speech to the party's conference in Bournemouth this afternoon, and dozens of schools in Northern Ireland will close at lunchtime as Storm Amy sweeps in from the Atlantic. Gusts of up to 80 miles per hour are forecast in northern parts of the UK. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 31 at 94.59. The pound buys $1.34 and the euro 14. LBC weather, the storm bringing very strong winds and heavy rain to many areas with gales in the north. A high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
That there is a great night's sleep. And when Susan wakes up, she's going to get to enjoy a delicious unlimited breakfast. Or, if that super comfy bed is just too hard to leave, Susan can enjoy a midday checkout. Get better sleep for your money. Book now at Premier Inn. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time, and before we turn our attention as we must and as we will to the fallout from yesterday's horrific terror attack in Manchester, just a moment to reflect upon the fact that it looks like the next Archbishop of Canterbury is going to be a woman. I've been doing this job for just over 20 years, and I'd never really got Church of England-based phone-ins off the ground. Indeed, I don't think I've ever really got Christian-based phone-ins off the ground. I don't know how relevant this is to what is going to ensue in the rest of the programme, but phone-ins about other religions, despite the fact that they are generally smaller religions, or perhaps because of the fact that they are generally smaller religions than Christianity in this country, can be incredibly fractious and sometimes very insightful and sometimes very fulfilling. But the idea of a female Church of England head Not quite the head of the church, that's still King Charles. But the idea that the most senior cleric in the Church of England could be a woman is extraordinary. Just by looking back through the sort of, through the passage of time. I want to just expand a little bit, if I may, on what I was saying in that little introduction, if indeed you heard it, about the difference in discourse, because you don't know where it is, and I don't know which discourse you're part of, apart, of course, from this one. But this is a radio station that of course, portrays a plurality of views and opinions, not just with the callers, but also with the presenters. And there will be some pretty hideous positioning in your orbit, I think. I'm going to boil it down, if I may, to the most simple of observations. There will be some people claiming that what happened in Manchester yesterday, where two men were killed, Adrian Dalby and Melvin Kravitz. Take a moment to reflect upon those names, Adrian Dalby and Melvin Kravitz. We honour their memory. There will be some people who will argue that they died as a consequence of Israeli actions in Gaza. And equally, there will be some people who will argue that they died as a consequence of criticism of Israeli actions in Gaza. The second position, intellectually much harder to sustain, of course, but as we've known for some time, as we've known forever, really, the conflict between emotions and intellect in issues as febrile, as historic, and as horrible as this is rarely won by the cold rationalists. But there are people, and you've probably encountered them, there are people who will be seeking to explain, if not excuse, this horrific atrocity by dint of what is going on in Gaza. And there will be people, and you may have heard some already, seeking to explain it by dint of criticism of what is going on in Gaza. That's my first point. I find both of those positions reprehensible because I can't say the only things that matter this morning, the only people that matter this morning are Adrian Dalby, Melvin Kravitz and their families. That's clearly not true, but I kind of wish it was. I wish we could just focus on relatively straightforward and simple questions, move into a place of peace, as Nick's last caller suggested, but we know that we can't. I also worry that one of the biggest wastes of time yesterday was undertaken by a man I admire very much and who works tirelessly in the field of community relations. I've mentioned him. I don't know that he's been on the program recently, but I speak of Sundar Katwala, who works for British Future and went to great pains on social media yesterday to collate heartfelt and sincere responses from all corners of our communities, notably our religious communities. So he was quoting heads of mosques, heads of Muslim movements. The Right Reverend David Walker, Bishop of Manchester, issued a statement. And it was, I found it very powerful. But as I registered how powerful I found it, mosques' statements of solidarity, as I registered how powerful I found it, I acknowledged and I knew, and I don't go on Twitter anymore, never more so than a day like yesterday, that in other corners of British public discourse in this country, I know that many people will be trying to use this horror, use these two deaths to their own political ends. They just will. And not just in this country. Attempts to blame it on Keir Starmer, whose children, if his wife is Jewish, I presume his children are Jewish, but attempts to blame it on Keir Starmer seem to me extraordinary. I'm also, and I don't know how we'll work our way into this, because it will demand levels of sensitivity that are almost impossible to contemplate, but I'm also conscious of the status of the modern state of Israel. So we're nudging towards this difficulty, aren't we, in separating criticism and or criticism or support of a state and criticism or support of a people. But just pause that thought for a moment, because I want to say something that's quite important. I want to say something that I've said to you many, many times on this program, often I think with a degree of futility, but just because you're points aren't landing doesn't mean that you should stop making them. There will be a lot of Jewish people in the United Kingdom today who are living that thing that I've said to you often, that was said to me by a Holocaust survivor many years ago. It's where we go when it happens again. And one man undertaking one horrific attack may, to an outsider, to a non-Jew, feel like an isolated incident, but it isn't and it shouldn't, not least because of the levels of security that every synagogue in the country has, and many Jewish schools as well. So there will be people today who are feeling that figure of speech, that phrase. They are feeling it in their very bones. It's where we go when it happens again. And that tracks me back to the difficulty of distinguishing on a day like today, and very few people are trying hard enough to make this distinction between anti-Semitism, which is a hatred of people because of accidents of birth over which they have absolutely no control. And that is a path that leads you to potentially, probably undertake events like the ones we saw yesterday, or perfectly reasonable criticism of the state of Israel and their continuing actions in Gaza that have been adjudged genocide by much wiser and much better qualified people than me. And I think we've probably been kidding ourselves a bit on the days that we think you can always keep those two things apart. You're not really allowed to. You're not really allowed to keep those two things apart. And yet I think we have to keep trying. We have to keep recognizing that you can believe that two things are wrong, horribly wrong. But I don't really want to talk about Gaza today, not at least in the first hour, not specifically. I want to talk about Britain. I want to talk about London, and I want to talk about calls from the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, who is fast looking like the best chance this government have got of wrestling some credibility from the ashes of inaction and incompetence that seem to have typified much of Keir Starmer's premiership. Some of it not his fault, some of it categorically his fault. But she has called for a planned protest in support of Palestine Action, a proscribed terror group. We've talked a lot about why I think, and many of you think it was a mistake to proscribe Palestine Action as a terror group. In fact, if we're in the business of conflation, if we're talking about the, I think, impossibility, and this may well be the conversation in the second hour, you can probably tell from my voice, I find it an almost unbearable prospect, but to just accept that although you have to keep trying to do it, there is an incredible amount of resistance to the idea that you can keep or criticism of Israeli government actions, criticism of Benjamin Netanyahu and Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir, you can somehow keep that separate from anti-Semitism, a hatred of Jews, and the effort and energy that goes into creating an environment in which you're not allowed to make that distinction is extraordinary from both sides. Again, I've used that phrase. Do you know, I almost tried at 3 minutes past 10 this morning to promise you that I wouldn't, but I can't, and I haven't, and I'm sorry. But of course, you know what I mean when I say that, both sides. So I today want to tell you why I think it would be wrong for the protest on Saturday to go ahead. I think it's fairly obvious, but I don't think that you can completely ignore the fact that if you call off a march that is not in its essence anti-Semitic, then you run a risk of creating either an argument or an idea that it is. Listen to what Shabana Mahmood had to say to Nick earlier this morning, and then I think we need to keep two things in mind. The difference between legitimate protest and potentially criminal action, but also context. And the context is that you don't do it tomorrow. That's all. You don't do it tomorrow. And that will be the position I expand upon after this, where Nick Ferrari asked Shabana Mahmood how the police would distinguish between legitimate protest and potentially criminal action, and specifically whether or not tomorrow's pro-Palestine action rally should go ahead?
Well, I'm very clear to the police, to our prosecution authorities and to the wider criminal justice system that anybody who breaks the laws of our land, including inciting hatred or calling for the killing of anyone in our community and especially in our Jewish community, they must face the full force of the law. What I would say to people who are concerned is, even if we look at the protest that took place last night, which I don't think should have gone ahead, but the police did have a strong presence at those protests, and they made something like 40 arrests. So people are being arrested, they will be charged and prosecuted. And I am very clear that anyone who calls for the killing of our citizens, who supports a banned terror organisation or otherwise incites racial hatred against our communities here in the UK, will feel the full force of the law.
Home Secretary, I know you and all senior police officers want to allow legitimate protest. It's what this country is built on. How are you and how are they going to determine what is legitimate protest and what is potential criminal action? What will your message be to both the police officers and the people who want to come on these demos?
Well, look, we have laws that protect the right to protest in this country. I'm working very closely with the police here in Manchester, but also across the country, to make sure that the resourcing is in place and that they are able to police these protests, to make sure that that line between that which is lawful and legitimate and that which is illegal is held, and that those who break the law are held to account. What I would say to people who are thinking about going on a protest today or over the weekend is to just take a step back. And just imagine how you would feel if it was your father that had been murdered, if your community had come under attack. Just because we have freedoms in this country doesn't mean to say we have to use them at every moment. Sometimes an act of kindness to allow people the chance to process what has happened and to grieve, I think that is in line with our British values. We should show some love and some solidarity to people who are suffering. The causes of these protests, the things that people want to protest about, aren't going away any day soon. Just wait a few days, give people a chance to begin processing what has happened.
You say wait a few days. I'm sure you're aware there is a big demonstration planned on Saturday, tomorrow, in Trafalgar Square by Defend Our Juries, which there has been a pro-Palestinian element. The police, I understand, would like to see that postponed. Would you support that?
Yes, I supported the police in asking Defend Our Juries to step back. I think they've indicated that they are going to go ahead.
And how do you react to that, Home Secretary? Clearly they're not listening.
They're not listening, and I'm very disappointed. I don't think they do their cause any favours by behaving in this way. If the point of protest is to, you know, stand up for something and persuade other people that you are right, then I think this is entirely the wrong way to go about it. But that is on their conscience. What I am sure will happen is that the police will respond to that protest. It will be policed, and anybody who breaks the law of our land will face the full force of the law.
17 minutes after 10, and that is as, of course, it should be. As the law currently stands, you have to subscribe to the rule of law, even if you want to work to change it in the meantime. But the Home Secretary there calling for a planned protest under the auspices of Defend Our Juries, J-U-R-I-E-S, to be postponed or called off. About 1,500 pledges to attend have been received. That could fluctuate with the weather and with events. But the Met Police have called upon them to pause it, not to do it. And there are two reasons for this. One has just been articulated by the Home Secretary, which is a question of sensitivity. And the other is a question of logistics, given that the Prime Minister has quite correctly called for increased security by the police at synagogues in this country in case of copycat attacks or further threats. The amount of police officers present on the streets of London, 2,500 at comparable events, becomes operationally significant. So I don't fully get the wisdom of calling off a protest that is not anti-Semitic in order to show that the country cares about anti-Semitism. And I often mock other people for letting their feelings overcome their reasoning. But it's just the right thing to do, isn't it? Tomorrow? Just tomorrow. You don't have this protest in support of Palestine action. 0345 6060973. We urge you to choose to prioritise protecting the community rather than arresting those peacefully holding signs in opposition to the absurd and draconian ban of a domestic direct action group. Defend Our Jury has told the Metropolitan Police in a letter of reply after being asked to postpone a mass protest against the ban on the group tomorrow so resources can be used to protect Jewish and Muslim communities after the terror attack at a Manchester synagogue. And I really want to know what you think. I really want to know whether you agree that this is the right thing to do at this moment. And I really want to know why you disagree. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. What possible reservations could you have? I'm going to just take a break, and I want you to know. I want you to tell me today, because I'm not confident enough to police all of the issues of sensitivity. Do you think it would be appropriate for me to read out the messages that I will get today, which deliberately conflate criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism, or would it actually be more respectful today to pause that sort of bile duct of hatred directed very personally towards me? I don't know what you think, and I'd value your guidance. So my gut instinct sometimes is to tell you what is going on and show you what's coming into the studio, but I wonder whether today that would actually add to the division that some of the people sending some of these messages are so keen to foster and foment. I don't know, but let's begin with the protest. You've got to call it off tomorrow, just tomorrow, because it would show everybody in the United Kingdom that Melvin Kravitz and Adrian Dalby were murdered in circumstances that shock and disgust every single one of us. 0345 6060 973. It's 10:21.
LBC.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 23 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The police have asked the organisers of a protest in support of Palestine Action to stay at home tomorrow, just tomorrow, as, the Home Secretary would say, as a mark of respect and sympathy for the Jewish community in this country, reeling even more than the rest of us from yesterday's events. And the police add into that mix the logistical observation that the resources that would be deployed on this protest could instead be used to protect Jewish and Muslim communities as security outside places of worship. Oh, man, 2025 should be a sort of day of a mix of celebration and comedy today as we find out who the new head of the Church of England is. Comedy is because most people in the country don't care. And instead I'm sitting here saying to you, as security will be ramped up outside places of worship, all three religions, if ironically is even the word, with their roots in the same words, Abrahamic religions. But would it be right to call off tomorrow's protest? Rick's in Manchester, which seems appropriate. Rick, what would you like to say?
Yeah, as a Jew, we feel totally ostracized. We've got the left wing, and to prove my point, my mother is 93. She'll be 94 next month. She told me last year things are a lot worse now regarding anti-Semitism than when I was a young girl. And I said, why is that, Mum? She said, because we looked on Mosley and the black shirts, and so did the British community, as crazy right-wing fascists who were a small minority. We now feel we've got the left wing, the Chris Williamsons, the George Galloway and Corbyn, Jeremy Corbyn, which I do appreciate what you were saying about him. You were standing up for the Jewish community when lots of people were looking the other way regarding Corbyn. And then we've got
you wouldn't
the
right-wing... You wouldn't know it from my inbox today, Rick, but I think let's resist the urge to make it about me and allow me, if I may...
No, but also, please let me finish.
I will.
And then we've got the right-wing, we've got the... We've got the Tommy Robinsons who go for the Muslims, but with his history of BNP membership, we also have issues with him because we know we're there as well. So we are feeling ostracized. And as you've pointed out, certain Jews go on the marches. So to use that and go to a holy place to attack members of my community is disgraceful. And then we've got people like the rapper.
The kneecap guy.
Yeah, no, the other guy.
Oh, the Bob Villain. Death, yeah.
Bob Villain, yes. And then kneecap, and people like that. And then you've also got Lineker, who claims he made a mistake.
Well,
it's too many times, James, and there's too much gaslighting going on. Even you, who supported us, even you, a few weeks ago, I listened, and somebody was saying that Jews were being taught the young children were taught the hatred. Then we have the police, the GMP police, who tore down posters of the hostage victims, the Bebas babies. Apology by the chief constable. We then have Lisa Connolly, outrageous comments, went to prison for what she said.
Lucy Connolly.
But the outrageous comments about the Jews, outrageous comments, which we're seeing now on social media. Will anybody be charged with that? We're feeling totally pushed out. And unfortunately, James, I'm hearing friends and family, not just today, but for the last, since October the 7th, are saying we do not feel safe in this country.
Thank you, Rick, for that. That's an incredibly powerful and important portrayal of how much, if not all, of your community is feeling. And it feels like a much more important point, and that's why I'm sorry for interrupting you. It feels like a much more important point than pushing you towards an answer to the question that I'm asking about tomorrow's Palestine action protest. So, if I may, I'll ask you a different one, which is, what does the route back look like for people like your mum? And I wonder if you can answer that question without referencing what's going on in Gaza. I kind of hope that you can, but I'm not sure that it's possible.
Well, I beg to differ there, James.
Okay, good.
You know, when my children play football and told Hitler's on speed dial, when last Sunday I was told at an interfaith football game, well, not interfaith, a Jewish team against a non-Jewish football team, Manchester Maccabi played, when a guy celebrated a goal with Free Palestine at a football match, and Jewish C word was used. And we
but
told
that's the point, Rick, isn't it?
FA, no, they didn't want to know.
That is the point, because those are two completely different interventions, one of which is entirely defensible, and one of which is entirely indefensible. And I categorically don't want to have an argument with you today, unless you're really up for one. But you can't. You can't conflate the two. You can't say that calling Free Palestine is comparable to calling Jewish people the C word. And that, in many ways, is unintentionally on your part.
It was done as an incitement, James.
But then how do you deal with it then? Then you ban it. And what happens then? It's an entirely unacceptable conflation.
During a game of football on the football pitch, you think that's acceptable?
I think it's acceptable anywhere and everywhere because it's not an anti-Semitic statement, Rick.
It was done within minutes. The other word was used within minutes.
That's an arrestable offence. But they're two completely different things.
Hitler on speed dial.
That's disgusting. But it's not the same as Free Palestine.
A 10 or 11 year old boy.
It's disgusting.
It's all connected.
It's obviously disgusting. And of course,
and there's too much gaslighting going on.
No, you can see
media.
And you can say that it's connected, but you have to hold on to the simple truth. Yes, but I need to first. You have to hold on to the very, very simple truth that calling for Free Palestine or expressing solidarity with the Palestinian people or condemning the carnage in Gaza is not on the same page, the same pitch, or the same planet as the examples of base and hideous anti-Semitism that you have just described. Up to and including, almost certainly, because details remain to be established, the horrific events in Manchester yesterday. And yet I don't even want to win this argument with you, Rick, because I can't. I know that Israel is where you go when it starts happening again, and I know that your whole life has been spent living in a way that means you can't ever conceive of, and I wouldn't be able to if I was you, conceive of circumstances in which you can condemn what Israel is doing, or you can accept that the Palestinian cause is as valid as the Israeli cause or the Jewish cause. You can't do it. It's part of your identity, and I respect that, and I recognise I'd probably be the same if I'd been raised like you. But I can't allow you to claim that virulent, obvious, blatant anti-Semitism is the same as calling for a Free Palestine. You understand that, right?
I never said that.
You offered them up as examples of the same phenomenon, but I really don't want to argue.
No, I didn't say that. You're putting words.
Before
yesterday, you would have put me in idiot corner.
I would not.
Since yesterday,
I would not.
Yes, you would, James. You wouldn't.
For what?
Because unfortunately, Sheila Fogarty would take my call.
For
but
what?
When I've tried to ring previously, you would not, your producers would not take my call for things I might have said.
Well, no, that's not true. Again, that's not true. Because today is a different day, so you've come on the show to answer a completely different question from the one that I was asking. And if that is your habit, then I respect that, but I just want you to understand, because you're making some fairly strong points, and they're unfair, and that's fine, because today is not a normal day. But as you've just demonstrated, you're keen to come on and make points that have absolutely nothing to do with the conversation that we're having and do not answer the question that I'm asking. And today, I don't just respect that,
What's
Rick.
The question? I do apologise.
Well,
what's the question?
Kind of proving my point. So if you haven't got onto programmes in the past, it's because you haven't rung in to contribute to the programme that I'm conducting. But today is not...
I have spoken to Sheila.
Today,
spoken to Nick.
I'm sure you have, but I have pretty strong switchboards that are full of callers, and we are very strict about only letting people on who are going to directly address the question that we're asking. Other people do different jobs, but you're here today and I welcome it. And immediately you've started asking completely different questions to the one that I'm asking. And today alone, I welcome that too, because I can feel the pain in your voice. And in many ways, the question that we're asking feels a little bit... it feels a lot less important than some of the points that you've made, but I would remind you, because I think you've genuinely forgotten, haven't you, that the question we're asking is about whether the Palestine Action protest should go ahead tomorrow.
Well, I spoke to your producer regarding that, and I'm sorry if I slightly digress.
You don't need to apologise to me.
No.
But should it go ahead?
Listen, as I said, what you said regarding Corbyn, the community was very appreciative. You stood up against him, and we did appreciate it. What I'm saying,
tomorrow's protest.
I went to see a neighbour yesterday this morning who's got the Palestinian flag up in the window, and I asked them, out of respect, would you take it down? And they said no. I said fine. I said salam aleichem, and I walked away. So obviously, okay. I don't feel, as you can imagine,
you can't separate the two, and I sympathise and respect that.
I support the Palestinian action going ahead today? It's disrespectful. It went ahead last night. There was a march in Manchester. It was disrespectful. I can't say anymore.
I agree that it looks disrespectful this weekend.
Many people who would disagree with you, James or I today.
Well, let's see.
It's disrespectful.
Well, I disagree with you about telling your neighbours what flags they can and can't put up in their window, because calling for solidarity with the Palestinian people or an end to what much wiser heads than you or I have concluded is a genocide does not involve anti-Semitism, hatred of Jews, or anything other than horror, shock and dismay at what happened in Manchester yesterday. And do you know, Rick, I thank you for that call. The extraordinary thing about it is that you have actually waded straight into the conversation I wasn't quite ready to have yet, which is about the impossibility, especially today, of extricating, in your mind, anti-Semitism from solidarity with Palestinian people, anti-Semitism from, to use another phrase, anti-genocide. You can't do it. And I get it. I've spent years explaining why, trying to understand why. I've had it explained to me a million times. It's not going to stop people accusing me of anti-Semitism. It's not going to stop people accusing you of trying to gaslight me. But I get it. And I can't really criticize you for it. But I can't join you in conflating a call for the end to genocide with a call for the criminalization and abolition of anti-Semitism. And yeah, you brought Lucy Connolly into it. I would include some of the things that you've just said on the list of behaviors that should be prohibited in public, that should be breaching the levels of incitement or racial and religious hatred. I categorically would, whether it's happening on Twitter or whether it's happening on a football pitch in Manchester. But to seek the silencing of people who are still protesting against military actions that I don't even have the number at my fingertips of how many were killed yesterday. I can hold both thoughts in my mind at the same time, Rick. And I understand that you can't. And I don't have any real criticism for you. And I'm grateful to you for sharing your thoughts with me this morning. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Two men killed in the terror attack at a synagogue in Manchester have been named as Adrian Dolby and Melvin Kravitz. They were killed by Jihad al-Shami, a 35-year-old British citizen of Syrian descent who carried out the car and stabbing attack yesterday morning. Three other people are being questioned on suspicion of terror offences. The Metropolitan Police has urged organisers to cancel a rally in support of the banned group Palestine Action planned for tomorrow. It says officers are needed to provide security cover in communities across London. Dame Sarah Mullally has been named as the first female Archbishop of Canterbury in the Church of England's history. The former Chief Nursing Officer and Bishop of London succeeds Justin Welby after he resigned almost a year ago. LBC weather, Storm Amy now bringing some very strong winds and heavy rain to northern parts of the UK. Gales developing this afternoon, a high of 18 degrees.
This is LBC.
Calling all black cab drivers. Let's talk about those quieter times when your meter's sitting idle and those journeys when you're coming back empty. Why not consider Uber? They can give your meter a boost just when you need it. Join close to 1,000 black cab drivers already on Uber and gain access to millions of passengers at the touch of a button. Black cabs on Uber are priced by your meter and the service fee will be no more than 5% until the end of 2025. Turn downtime into prime time. Go to uber.com/blackcabs to start earning today. Terms and conditions apply.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October. 2 days of big deals on electronics, home, kitchen and more. That'll make you feel less like... and more like... feel like a big deal. Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October. Exclusively for Prime members. Join Prime now.
It's great up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get 2 Sun Super Day stickers for the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 20 minutes to 11, and I haven't decided yet, and to be honest, you're a little bit divided on whether or not we should read out the nastier texts that I tend to get on days like today. But to the people sending them, I can press a button and see every text you've ever sent to the radio station, so I just feel a little bad for you wasting time this morning pretending that you hold certain positions and opinions or that they've changed in the... event of, or in the light of relatively recent events or whatever that may be. I can see what you were sending to the station a year ago, 2 years ago, I think 5 years ago. So I can see you. 2211 is the time. And I can see Rick's point clearly, but I can never, I don't think, accept that, you ban or censor or silence voices calling for an end to what is happening in Gaza because anti-Semitism blatantly, obviously exists. And it seems to me that the conflation is undertaken by everybody who's not in the middle. It's weird that the conflation is usually what the accusation involves. You say you are conflating criticism of Benjamin Netanyahu with anti-Semitism. But, you know, after yesterday's horrific events, straight away you have very senior people in public life, both here and in Israel, claiming that Keir Starmer is somehow responsible for it because he hasn't done enough to stop protests against Israel's actions in Gaza. And I said to you, I said to Rick, I wasn't ready to get into that side of the conversation yet, but hey, as I think he demonstrated quite perfectly, it's your show at least as much as it is mine. So I will continue asking the question about tomorrow's protest, and I will continue taking your calls, and I will continue my original intention to move into that much more complicated territory a little later in the programme, albeit that that may have been a slightly over-optimistic or naive ambition. And thank you, of course, I mentioned the hate that comes in. Thank you to the massive majority of people getting in touch to express appreciation and thanks and gratitude for the way in which we manage somehow, with your help, to conduct conversations like this, even on a day like today. We're going to stay in Manchester. Judith is in Didsbury. Judith, what would you like to say?
Hello. Thank you, James. And you've said quite a lot of the things that I'm thinking. I'm Jewish. I am a pro-Palestinian campaigner and have been for many years. And I'm heavily involved in demonstrations locally and in the centre of Manchester, and have been, well, for more than the last 2 years, but particularly since then.
Right.
And we have a weekly demonstration on a Friday outside our MP's office.
Right.
And we have had discussions this morning about whether we go ahead. And we've decided we will. However, it is going to be a silent demonstration, so no chanting, no encouraging of cars and vehicles to beep right. in support and so on. And we hold placards with dead children on them from Gaza. And it is horrific. And yesterday, there were at least 30 more deaths in Gaza.
The figure I've got is 53.
Thank you. And, you know, we can't ignore that. I'm horrified by what happened yesterday, and I really feel it. I grew up near that synagogue, and I know people now. I have friends who went to many events there, celebrations, funerals, weddings, bar mitzvahs, everything. It's horrific, and I was so glad that my daughter was visiting last night, because it's so upsetting. But I feel, as a Jew, that I have to protest, because this is not what we're supposed to be about. Not killing people, not othering people. And I just feel so strongly that, you know, we have to keep protesting the genocide, and we do it in a respectful way. And we, it doesn't mean we condemn, support what's happened, of course. But one of the main things that is a problem, and we've said this all along, and when I say we, I mean we Jewish pro-Palestinians, and I found a real community in this group.
Right. Forgive me for interrupting, I just want to clarify one thing. Is that the driving force of the whole group, or is that just a description of member of the group?
We're a large group. Our local disparate group is at least 140 people.
Right.
But there are a significant number of us are Jewish.
Okay.
And we have up banners, Jewish Action for Palestine, Jews Against Gaza Genocide, and so on. And I regularly march with those banners through Manchester. And the only anti-Semitism I've ever encountered has been from Zionists.
Who've
called me terrible names and told me I'm not a proper Jew and all sorts of things.
This is, you use the word to describe people who don't think it's possible ever for Israel to do anything wrong. Is that a fair? Because it's a nuanced word. I've struggled with it in the past.
Yes, indeed. I think so.
Not people who believe in the necessity of the modern state of Israel, in which case you would be a Zionist. Mm-hmm.
I think I've changed my mind on that, to be honest.
Really?
By the happenings of the last 2 years, yes. I'd like to see.
Well, then I'm more of a Zionist than you are.
Yes, a two-state solution is impossible because they won't allow Palestine to have a state.
Well, the current regime won't, but I'm not going to argue with you about this.
I wanted to argue
with Rick about the other thing. How hard is it, and how stupid is it of me to come to work this morning thinking, I wonder if I could conduct this conversation in a way that doesn't actually blur the line between anti-Semitism and anti-Netanyahu sentiment.
No, I think it's incredibly important, and that's what we do all the time. And I have never on the marches encountered, any anti-Semitism apart from people attacking us from the other side. In fact, in our local group, we ran a session at our Muslim colleagues' request. So some of us Jews put on a session to talk about anti-Semitism, what it was, where, because sometimes people want to be critical and it can tip over the line from, you know, being critical of the state of Israel, the current iteration of the state of Israel, and into anti-Semitism. And so we were making those boundaries clear. But they asked us to do that. And everyone's so respectful.
A lot of people don't want you to do that. A lot of people want the line between the two to be invisible. They want it to be
removed. This morning, the chief rabbi, who constantly repeats, he was talking about Jew hate on the street. Mm. It is not Jew hate. It is anti-Israeli actions. It is anti the IDF, the way they act now. It is anti-Netanyahu. It is not anti-Jewish. None of us would take part in those demonstrations if it was.
And I'm going to add, because I'm on tiptoes this morning, I'm going to add that you are not suggesting for a minute that Jew hate is not real, that anti-Semitism does not exist, that yesterday's atrocity was, I mean, go as far as we can responsibly, probably motivated by anti-Semitism. It's hard to think of another reason why you'd murder Jews outside as a synagogue.
On the holiest day of the year.
And on the holiest day of the year. So you managed to walk that tightrope.
Exactly.
And it is fair to say, as you have said, that some people don't want that tightrope to exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
I think that's the thing. But we've also been saying all along, these actions of particularly Netanyahu and obviously his other extreme cabinet members is going to lead to more genuine anti-Semitism, and I believe that is the case. I mean, I'm for my sins, I'm still on Twitter.
God, rather you than me.
I mean, I've blocked so many things, and I do, you know, monitor what I can see. However, I do see the rise of anti-Semitism, genuine anti-Semitism, and it's horrifying. But it was predictable.
Well, I often feel, and, you know, it's going to be quite far down the list before Irish people like me get included in the in the nets of hatred, but it could easily happen.
It could happen again, indeed it could.
Of course it could, but it's always incredible to me that people don't realise that the weapons are the same regardless of the target, and once you start promoting or defending the use of the weapons, you sacrifice any control at all over what the next target might be.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
I needed your call today.
Thank you.
No, thank you, and stay safe. And tomorrow's protest in Didsbury will involve silence, respect, and I think principle. But again, I'm going to compare Judith to Rick and say that I find both positions easy to understand, even though they are completely opposed to each other. It is 10 to 11.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
For some people, it has become, I'm afraid, a bit of a sign of their own social conscience to lump all Jews together. And where has that led? It has led to children being walked to school in this country by security. And if I were Jewish, would I really, hand on heart, think this was a safe place for me to be? I'm not sure I would believe that this is as safe a place as it should be.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the LBC app.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're cruising through Europe's iconic cities along the Danube or enjoying a rainforest tour through Costa Rica. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet, she's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
It's right up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get 2 Sun Super Day stickers to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
Business healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
I'd been in the family home for 30 years, but it was different. Too many rooms, too few voices. Moving to McCarthy Stone felt like a big step, but this place is full of life. I chat to someone every day. In the lounge, in the garden, even in the lift. I have my own apartment, but I'm never truly alone. I only wish I'd done it sooner.
Discover stunning retirement apartments exclusively for the over 55. Search McCarthy Stone or call 0800 153 3055. Age restrictions and qualifying criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10:53 is the time. Here are a couple of texts that highlight the, I don't know, I almost said the relevance, but it might actually be the irrelevance of today's conversation. The first is from Dan, who writes, as a British Jew who is appalled by the attack on the Manchester synagogue yesterday, I am nevertheless perfectly able to understand the difference between an anti-Semitic attack and a protest against the actions of a sovereign state against the people of Gaza. The Home Secretary seems to be going out of her way to conflate criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. It's shameful. This should be resisted. And then Julia, both at 10:21, so they both came in at exactly the same point in the programme, who writes, and this is and was my position at that moment and is still now, it's a no-brainer, James. Out of kindness and care for fellow citizens, the protest should be postponed, not cancelled. And there it is, somewhere between those. Well, there is no truth, is there, on this? Just opinion. And I want to read this from Alex because it's quite important. And something that I should reflect on. I love you, James, and I 99% agree with you. Feels a bit silly today, that rule that you have to tell me that you love me before you criticise me, because there's not a lot of love in some of the messages coming into the studio. But you're seeing the wrong conflation. To say free Palestine in almost any situation is both defensible and necessary. But on that football pitch at that time, this is referring back to a caller called Rick who rang in from Manchester to describe events at a recent football game, I think involving one of his children. It wasn't directed at Israeli policy, at Benjamin Netanyahu, or at the IDF. It was clearly and deliberately conflating them with the members of a Jewish football team. In that case, then, the intent was anti-Semitic, and that's from Alex in Tulse Hill. I think he's probably right, isn't he, that the context in that case does define the offence. And of course, what you have to acknowledge at this point is that lots of people who shout free Palestine in any context whatsoever will also be anti-Semitic. But the massive majority of people who shout free Palestine in, to borrow Alex's statistic, 99% of situations will not be. And I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you prescribe or police that. But I do know that most of the people who have expressed deep concerns about freedom of speech in this country in recent months will have absolutely nothing at all to say about it. Farah is in Southfields. Farah, what made you pick up the phone?
So we've spoken so many times before, and I am somebody who has been now on 26 Palestine marches, 2 anti-Tommy Robinson ones, 1 anti-Farage one. So I'm on the streets protesting a great deal, it feels. I am going to try and be hopeful, but in answer to your question, no. The Palestine Action protest tomorrow absolutely should not go ahead. They can do that at any time. The one last night also, I think, was disgraceful. It should have been called off. And I am following the flotilla. I think there are some in the Palestine Solidarity movement that, you know, you really need to read the room. And what I said to your producer is that today, I think, should be about wrapping our arms around our Jewish community. So no, please, I don't think you should read out those texts that are just going to offend them, make them more scared. I think it also reinforces some really ugly tropes about some of these people who supposedly are empathetic or for humanity when they come out with this nonsense. And I think today, I think we're at a really fragile but precious moment in our country and in our history where it's a time for unity. We can grab this, especially in a country that's so inflamed with racism.
Do you think we can? I'm going to read you something. I'm probably not going to read the bin of bile that constitutes a tiny proportion of the message coming into my studio, but I will read you some words from the front page of the best-selling newspaper in this country, if I may. From woke police chiefs to left-wing politicians, the list of the killer's enablers is legion. They should have blood on their consciences. Now, I don't know how somebody with a deeply rooted prejudices or a slightly fragile grasp on life and reality at the moment will respond to that, but it reads to me like I don't even need to use my own description of it. From woke police chiefs to left-wing politicians, the list of the killer's enablers is legion. They should have blood on their consciences is on the front page of the Daily Mail, which means it will be probably a tenth as vile as what is swilling through Elon Musk's platform. And I want to be with you and hope that this will be a moment for unity, rejection. But that is where, and that's why I open the show today by talking about the three levels of public discourse. You've got that, you've got social media, and then you've got us. You've got people like you and Judith and Richard who can have conversations about this and have common goals, but who, I don't know, seem to be disappearing beneath the waves sometimes, Farah.
Well, we have to rise up. We have to rise up because we are better than this. And I think that when I'm talking about unity, it's not just about calling into a radio show and saying nice things.
No, of course it's not.
I'm somebody who's very practical. I have to do something when I'm upset or if I think something's wrong. So my children and I had a conversation yesterday. I'm going to contact my local synagogue today. I've never been there. I don't know who they are, in order to see what I can do to support my local Jewish community. I reached out to my close friends. I reached out to Jewish friends who I've not spoken to or worked with for 20 years. I reached out to parents in my year group that I barely know. I'm a class rep, but I still barely, it's a very big year group.
Sure.
My children are going in today to speak to the school about a unity assembly. They're going to try and find and fundraise for some type of cross-cultural, multi-faith charity that supports youth groups. You know, now is the time for protecting our citizens and our values. And I always think at the absolute worst of times, there is always that light. There is always that opportunity to say, this is not us. This is not what we will put up with. This is not who we are. And by, you know, pushing that protest back tomorrow, and for me, the one last night really made me sick. Last night, I listened to LBC from the morning all the way through. You were brilliant yesterday, as were your presenters, till midnight, till I actually couldn't listen to the heartbreak and the fear of Jewish people calling in. You know, we don't.
For people who don't know, the protests that broke out, I think, in Manchester and London were unplanned and were somehow in response to a terror attack on a synagogue.
My mind, it's just boggling. It's like, this is a moment for pause.
So you've been on 23 marches in protests in solidarity with
26.
The people. 26 in solidarity, but that's not an opinion, that's counting. In solidarity with the people of Palestine, and when you saw people choosing that moment to ally themselves with your cause in a very public way, you were genuinely disgusted. I can hear it in your voice.
I was disgusted. It really upset me. I think it puts back the cause, it muddies the waters, it allows people who are bad actors to...
it's the conflation, you know, from the other side.
And it's the conflation. And I had this conversation with a Jewish friend yesterday, and she said, you know, I don't think people understand that you can be Jewish and not agree with what's happening in Gaza. And I, honestly, James, in this country, with the amount of media, the amount of conversation, especially that all of you have on LBC, I just think that people who are still conflating the two are willingly doing that. It's intentional. It's there to hurt. And it doesn't help us. We have to focus on what we can practically do in order to protect our society, fight against the fascism, keep Farage out, and do all of these things. You know, that's what we should be focused on. I am so focused on Palestine.
Clearly.
But the protest tomorrow is wrong. You know, have some respect, have some empathy. Choose a terrified.
I'm with you completely. And you know, I needed to hear it from you, actually, just to have my own thoughts clarified in a way. And I'm far from alone. Let me read you what William has said. This is an excellent call. I'm also 100% behind the flotilla, behind ending the genocide in Gaza, and I'm unrelentingly anti-Farage, Musk and all the rest of them. But I agree, this is the time for unity, not for protests or marches. It doesn't surprise me that newspaper is taking the opposite route, says William Keston. Farah, thank you. Really, thank you. I know we've spoken a lot. And Richard may be spitting nails at the fact that you mentioned you've been on the show a lot of times, but of course you went straight into answering the question that we're actually asking, although today, for once, that isn't necessarily a requirement to come on air. 3 minutes after 11. I mean, what are you supposed to do you think, to the woke police chiefs or the left-wing politicians who are described on the front page of the Daily Mail as enabling a terrorist killer? And having blood on their consciences. What do you think they want you to do to the woke police chiefs and the left-wing politicians? How do they want you to respond to this description? That's what Will and Farah and I are talking about, that simple choice between division and violence, whether verbal, physical or murderous, and unity, solidarity and... Joe Cox used to observe all the time that what we have in common is greater than what keeps us apart. But that has never felt flimsier to me. Never felt flimsier. It's 11:04.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a multi-faith vigil has been taking place in Manchester after two people were killed in the synagogue terror attack. Adrian Dolby and Melvin Kravitz, who were 53 and 66, have been named as the victims of the car and stabbing attack in Crumpsall. In the last few moments, Greater Manchester Police has said one of the men who died may have been injured by a shot fired by an armed officer. Omri Simon, who received a call telling him not to go to the synagogue yesterday, has been speaking to LBC.
A lot of people made it out, but some of our... A friend of ours has died, a friend that my mum has known for the last 50 years, basically, has died. So, I mean, not everybody made it out. Not everybody has survived this horrible attack. Right now, there's no coping with it, really. I don't want to be blunt, but we're all... in pain, we're all suffering, and the Jewish community in Manchester is very small. There's only about 30,000 Jews. So if you don't know the person, you probably know somebody that knows the person.
The attacker has been identified as Jihad al-Shami, a 35-year-old British citizen of Syrian descent. He was shot dead by police yesterday morning. LBC's reporter Liam Gotting has the latest from the scene.
That formal identification is yet to take place, but they believe he is the person responsible for the attack. They also revealed that they now have three suspects in custody currently who have been arrested on suspicion of commission, preparation and instigation of acts of terrorism. They are two men in their 30s and a woman in her 60s.
The Metropolitan Police has urged organisers to cancel a rally in support of the banned group Palestine Action tomorrow. It says every available officer is needed to ensure the safety of Jewish communities across London. 40 people were arrested at a Gaza demonstration in Westminster last night. The Church of England is to be led by a woman for the first time in its history. Dame Sarah Mullally, the former Chief Nursing Officer and Bishop of London, has been named as the new Archbishop of Canterbury. She's been delivering her first address in Canterbury Cathedral, referencing yesterday's synagogue attack.
I know that the God who is with us draws near to those who suffer. We then, as a church, have a responsibility to be a people who stand with the Jewish community against anti-Semitism in all its forms. Hatred and racism of any kind cannot be allowed to tear us apart.
And in the last few minutes, it's been announced the actress Dame Patricia Routledge, best known for her TV show Keeping Up Appearances, has died at the age of 96. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 94.59. That's up 31. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather. Storm Amy now bringing very strong winds and heavy rain to many parts of the UK. Schools in Northern Ireland have been told to close at lunchtime. Gales will develop across northern areas more widely this afternoon. A high of 18 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
The Volkswagen approved use sale is on. This October, get an extra £500 off your next used Volkswagen when you part exchange any car. And who doesn't love a bit of extra? Extra legroom.
Oh, nice.
Extra time in bed. An extra day's holiday.
Woohoo!
Now you can enjoy an extra £500 off when you part exchange any car for one of our incredible 12,000 used Volkswagens. Visit your local retailer and drive one home today. Sale now on. Hurry, ends 20th of October. UK retail customers 18 plus at participating retailers. See website for full offer, T's and C's and exclusions. Contact your retailer for more info.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 8 minutes after 11. That is, I think it's possibly an overused word, but that is a harrowing development in yesterday's terror attack. I'm going to read you the full statement from Chief Constable Sir Stephen Watson following yesterday's incident on Middleton Road in Crumpsall. That's the police's language, not mine. Following the terrorist incident yesterday, that's my language and the police's language, let me start again. Following the terrorist incident yesterday at the Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation, Middleton Road, Crumpsall, further and urgent inquiries continue. Overnight, we have taken advice from the Home Office pathologist ahead of full post-mortem examinations scheduled for later today. The Home Office pathologist has advised that he has provisionally determined that one of the deceased victims would appear to have suffered a wound consistent with a gunshot injury. It is currently believed that the suspect, Jihad Al-Shami, was not in possession of a firearm, and the only shots fired were from GMP's authorised firearms officers as they worked to prevent the offender from entering the synagogue and causing further harm to our Jewish community. It follows, therefore, that subject to further forensic examination, this injury may sadly have been sustained as a tragic and unforeseen consequence of the urgently required action taken by my officers to bring this vicious attack to an end. We have also been advised by medical professionals that one of the three victims currently receiving treatment in hospital has also suffered a gunshot wound, which is mercifully not life-threatening. It is believed that both victims were close together behind the synagogue door as worshippers acted bravely to prevent the attacker from gaining entry. Our thoughts and prayers remain with all of the families and the wider community impacted by this incident across Greater Manchester and beyond. Specialist officers are providing support and care for all of those directly affected, including our brave first responders. That is absolutely horrifying. And, I mean, it's my job, isn't it, to have views and sometimes to conjure up views on a sixpence. But I think I'm just going to sit with the sadness of that scenario for a moment and invite Andy Hughes, LBC's crime correspondent and, of course, host of the Crime Agents podcast to join me live from Manchester. I don't remember anything like this happening before, Andy, but I possibly don't have the encyclopedic knowledge that I'd need in order to do so. But it just adds layer upon layer of heartbreak and horror to an already hideous situation.
That's right, James. This is as tragic as it gets. It's our job as journalists to remain emotionless while reporting the news, but when you hear stuff like this, it's difficult not to really feel it. I mean, this is just an utterly tragic incident. The two people who were trying to stop the terrorist getting in to commit more atrocities were the ones who eventually paid the price. One of the people inside the synagogue, they tragically died. The other was injured and is still in hospital now. But it's really hard to put into words how to get this story across, because
I understand that. It must be a consideration for firearms officers, but it's not, I presume, I mean, it can't be, can it? Because you just have one job, and that is to take out the suspect in these kind of situations.
Well, that's it. These officers are trained to focus on the threat, and the threat was Jihad Al-Shami. Yeah. And it was their job to, in their words, neutralize the threat. And that's what they were trying to do. This is just an absolute tragic consequence of what happened.
Indeed it is. We may talk to Andy a little more later as more details emerge. But at the moment, this a completely unexpected and I think close to unprecedented development. And if you've sort of seen any of the footage or read any of descriptions of how the drama, as I'm just reading a newspaper headline calling it a drama, as how the terrorist incident unfolded, then you may understand, you will understand, I can understand how this could have happened. But my God, thoughts and prayers already with the families of everybody affected, either very directly or indirectly. And now you have to add police officers and possibly one police officer to the list of people who are now going to be dealing with extraordinary feelings and facts. 13 minutes after 11 is the time. I mean, it's not as nuanced. No, forgive me. It is more nuanced than perhaps I thought it would be. I felt it was a bit of a no-brainer that the protests don't go ahead tomorrow. If I had to pick a favourite caller so far, it would probably be Farah for her explanation and her condemnation, indeed, of people who elected to protest last night. I may need to just clarify something on that particular issue. But the idea of it going ahead somehow playing into the idea that expressing support for Palestine or indeed condemnation of Benjamin Netanyahu's tactics in Gaza, if the march went ahead, it would somehow send a message of hatred and enmity to the Jewish community, is something that quite a few of you are picking up on. So we'll continue with that conversation and open it up a little further into the arena of what you do with that conflation. Because I don't think it's... I don't see how you can. I mean, you've got people equating saying free Palestine with supporting Adolf Hitler, including some very senior people in this drama. And by that, I mean the entire geopolitical situation. And if you're doing that from the side of supporting Israel, what on earth are people who condemn the events in Gaza, but either love the state of Israel or recognize the necessity of the existence of the state of Israel, the importance of the state of Israel, when they're constantly being lectured on how they shouldn't conflate the two? I guess I'm beginning to wonder, not for the first time, whether it is a fool's errand to try to walk that tightrope. It can't be, can it? You have to carry on trying, even if it doesn't sometimes feel like there will be any conclusion but failure. It is 11:15.
LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
It's right up here on the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get two Sun Super Day stickers to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
We had our smart meter installed a year ago, and it's made things so much easier. Not having to submit meter readings or having to deal with estimated bills is great.
A smart meter sends meter readings direct to your energy supplier. It means you get accurate bills, not estimated bills, and you don't even need an internet connection. Call your energy supplier to request a smart meter today.
Real testimonials voiced by actors. Eligibility may vary.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 606097.
17 minutes after 11 is the time, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we continue to reflect upon yesterday's horrors in Manchester and digest the latest development, if you're just joining me, that one of the men who died has, or the Home Office pathologist has provisionally determined that one of the deceased victims appears to have suffered a wound consistent with a gunshot injury. I noticed on my switchboard that Bradley had rung in again. Bradley spoke to us yesterday about the area, about the synagogue, about King David's School, which sits very near to the Heaton Park Hebrew congregation, and he provided a lot of helpful context and a lot of helpful insights. And so I was keen to know why he'd rung back today, and I can't quite believe what I'm seeing, Bradley, and that must be tiny compared to your reaction to what you discovered later yesterday.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, obviously when I spoke to you originally, there was no mention of, there was injuries, but there was no mention of deaths at that point. Yeah. So it was a slightly different sense of what was going on, but obviously afterwards we heard that that two people had lost their lives. And yes, yeah, so I woke up this morning and I looked at the news and I looked at the names and I was like, God, I know that guy. So I went to school with his brother at King David. I'm sure he was about 3 or 4 years older than me. Now, I haven't spoken to either of them for 30 odd years.
Sure.
But I think it just shows you that, and I think one of your other callers said it, even the population of Jewish people in Manchester is 25,000, and the fact that I knew one of those that I knew Adrian. I didn't know him personally, but I knew his brother. Well, it just shows you how small that community is, and how you could be touched by something.
You know the old thing about 6 degrees of separation. Yeah. It's probable that every Jew in Manchester is going to have some sort of connection with people who were in the synagogue, or indeed, in your case, with people who were killed or injured.
What's it done to you? Well, to be honest with you, this morning, they kind of talked about those marches and the rhetoric of some of those marches, and that kind of got me a little bit riled up. And I spoke to a lot of Jewish people, and we talked about those marches and how they made them feel. But I listened to your show this morning, and it brought me back down to earth, because I think ultimately, James, I think our political tents are pitched quite close together.
Okay.
And I listened to Judith and I listened to Farah, and that's why I want that. I want to believe both those ladies, because I believe in heaven. Those marches are full of good people, and I support that type of action. I don't want people to be killed in Gaza, but the Jewish people I speak to, there is still a sense of fear that when they go into Manchester town centre, that there are underlying anti-Semitic things being spoken and said.
Yes.
And I just can't get away from that. But I want to believe Farah. I want to believe Judith. I want to believe in the good of these people.
Well, I mean, both things can be true at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, you can be passionately opposed to what's happening in Gaza and passionately committed to the existence of the modern state of Israel, and deeply, I mean, profoundly disgusted by what happened in your part of Manchester yesterday. And I don't know, the wrestle I had this morning was with whether or not it's a bit too early to ask the question about why so much effort is put into trying to close that position down. You know, I need to triple check, but I think we've got a very senior Israeli politician, and not necessarily one of the ones that's routinely described as far right, suggesting that even the phrase Free Palestine equates somebody with Adolf Hitler. And that is a very obvious attempt to explode any distinction between anti-Semitism and anti-Netanyahu sentiment.
Yeah.
I don't know how we walk that tightrope, but I doubt you do either.
No, it's something that is so difficult, and it's so nuanced. And somebody said something the other day, which I think it was a caller, that anti-Semitism is a light sleeper.
Yeah.
And you don't have to scratch very far down to get that. I mean, I get that all the time. I noticed something a couple of weeks ago. My teenage son was on one of his devices, and I've noticed that he changed his name. Now, I've got a really quite, you know, if you heard my surname, you'd go, yeah, he's Jewish.
Right.
And he changed his name to Harreaves. And I was like, because he didn't go to a Jewish school. And I was like, why did you do that? And he was like, well, that name's a bit, I get a lot of people saying stuff about Palestine. And I'm like, well, it's just...
You've nailed it.
And I don't know what to say.
No, I mean, unfortunately, that's not a luxury I can indulge with the job that I've got, but you're perfectly entitled to run out of words.
Just,
but that is it, because people are approaching your boy in that fashion with rhetoric and probably some unpleasantness regarding Palestine because he has a Jewish surname, but you cannot take from that any suggestion, and I know that you don't, but an earlier caller from your city came close to it. You cannot take from that the conclusion that all expressions of support for the people in Gaza or all condemnations of Netanyahu are by definition anti-Semitic. I mean, it's anti-Semitic to accuse every Jew of supporting a genocide, which is pretty close to what your boy is experiencing at the moment.
It's a mess. I just think if we can talk on your show for 3 hours and try and spread a little bit of love, a little bit of humanity, and try and break some of these borders down, then we might be going some way. But I just think it's most of the stuff is irreparable, and it's a shame because we're just all human beings, aren't we?
Yeah, we are, mate. Absolutely, we are. Thank you for that. And a timely and an important reminder, and that is why today I've elected not to read out the messages trying to do precisely the opposite of what Bradley calls for, although I'm sure you'll understand why I chose to read out an extraordinary intervention on the front page of the Daily Mail this morning. And you know, it's about trying to pin a horror like this. And it would now appear that one of the deaths was a consequence of a gunshot wound discharged by an officer. But, and I think I'm allowed to say this. If I'm not, I'll deal with the consequences. There's no doubt in my mind who was responsible for that death. And it was not the man who pulled the trigger or the woman who pulled the trigger. I don't. Other details may emerge to cause me to review that position, but you don't look at these tragedies and say it's all their fault or it's all their fault, whether you're talking about people encouraging Benjamin Netanyahu's actions, supporting his actions in Gaza, or whether you're talking about people condemning them. I don't actually understand how you can respond to an atrocity like yesterday's by trying to pin it on people that you already don't like. It seems to me extraordinary. People who are anti-genocide are responsible for a terrorist attack. People who are pro-genocide or who hate the word ever being used are somehow responsible for a terrorist attack. None of them are. None of them are. One man so far is. And if it turns out that he's been radicalized by others, which is usually the case, then they will bear responsibility as well. But what does radicalization look like? It involves telling people that entirely innocent human beings are somehow responsible for or complicit in atrocities, killings, or carnage. Entirely innocent human beings are somehow responsible for or complicit in horrible events that they had absolutely nothing to do with. So whether you're going after Jews for the crime of being Jewish, or whether you're going after pro-Palestinian protesters for the crime of being pro-Palestinian, to leap from those positions to complicity in or enabling of what we saw in Manchester yesterday is actually inconceivable to me, and yet it's almost everywhere. From woke police chiefs to left-wing politicians, the list of the killers' enablers is legion. They should have blood on their consciences. It's on the front page of the Daily Mail. And as Bradley reminds us, at school, with one of the men killed yesterday, we are all human. Hard to remember that sometimes. And the question that we're asking at the moment, if you've forgotten, and goodness knows you could have been forgiven for doing so, is whether or not the Palestine Action March should go ahead tomorrow. And do you know, sometimes on this programme, I get a little bit authoritarian about the difference between facts and feelings. And sometimes you'll acknowledge, you'll know, because you've been here with me, you recognise that sometimes feelings trump facts, actually. And most obviously, love. You know, we fall in love with people. We don't run spreadsheets or undertake risk assessments or anything like that. You can't help who you fall in love with. And sometimes it is important to listen to your feelings. Ideally, not when you're voting in a referendum, but hey-ho, that's water under the bridge. And it just feels to me, and Farah put it best, the caller that Bradley was referring to, it just feels to me that you don't have this protest tomorrow. Partly, I would say now, and I didn't realise this at 10 o'clock, partly because a lot of people who do harbour hatred towards Jewish people, or some people who harbour hatred towards all Jewish people, the kind of kids who are picking on Bradley's boy online because he's got a Jewish surname, also march under the banner of being pro-Palestine. But you certainly don't prohibit protest permanently. You just say, do you know what, tomorrow, let's all just put our arms around each other. Unless, I suppose, you're a woke police chief or a left-wing politician, in which case I don't know what it is these people want to happen to you. It's coming up to 29 minutes after 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'll come to Gary and Finchley first after the news, because it's not the kind of conversation that people are currently minded to drop sort of pithy little contributions into the mix. Let me just bring you up to date, if you're just joining us, with a truly horrific development in the events in Manchester yesterday. The Chief Constable in Manchester, Sir Stephen Watson, has revealed that the Home Office pathologist has advised that he has provisionally determined that one of the deceased victims would appear to have suffered a wound consistent with a gunshot injury. That the suspect, Jihad al-Shami, was not in possession of a firearm, and the only shots fired were from GMPs, Greater Manchester Police's authorised firearms officers. And speaking to Andy Hughes, our crime correspondent, a moment ago, we know that the injured and at least one of the dead was essentially keeping the door shut as this character tried to breach the synagogue's security, and that is the scenario in which these shots were discharged. More on that may emerge in the course of today, and if it does, you will be among the very first to know. Victim died after being accidentally shot by police is one of the headlines that I'm seeing on the screens in front of me, but I wonder if they've moved a little too quickly on that. We will, as I say, potentially find out shortly. 11:30 is the time. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
One of the two men who died in yesterday's synagogue attack may have been killed by police gunfire. Greater Manchester Police says one of the people being treated in hospital also suffered a non-life-threatening gunshot wound. The terrorist attacker, Jihad al-Shami, did not have a firearm. The two men who died have been named as 53-year-old Adrian Dolby and 66-year-old Melvin Kravitz. And Dame Sarah Mullally has been named as the new Archbishop of Canterbury. She's used her first address to say she stands with the Jewish community after yesterday's attack. LBC weather, Storm Amy now bringing some strong winds and heavy rain to many parts of the UK, some strong gales in Northern Ireland at the moment, a high of 18 degrees.
This is LBC.
Across the UK, people like Phil face their toughest challenges alone.
It's a pain that I feel like the body can't comprehend losing a child because you are not supposed to outlive your children.
LBC's charity, Make Some Noise, is here to support people like Phil.
It's kind of a family that you never wanted to be a part of and you would never choose to be a part of it. But now you're in it, you don't know what you'd do without.
You can change lives. Donate now at makesomenoise.com. Proudly supported by Furniture Village.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
It's great up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get two Sun Super Day stickers to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
I'm telling you, raise taxes. That's how.
Cut spending. Less waste. More sense.
Move north. Get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 32 minutes after 11, and it's a fascinating question. It's not quite the no-brainer that I thought it was, and some of the people explaining why they think protests in support of Palestine tomorrow should go ahead have given many of us some pause for thought. But I remain very much of the Home Secretary's view, and that's not a phrase I say very often, that time is relevant to this topic, not just events. And it feels like a time to come together on very common ground, which would be mourning and sympathy for the events of yesterday. Palamine put it rather well earlier. I'm going to just dig that out and read it to you, because it's somebody who I've turned to quite a lot in recent months, actually, pretty much since Labour got into power, but also particularly in the last few days. The Home Secretary is entirely right The vast majority of the British public will agree with her that this weekend is not a weekend for a march like this, and it will have an impact on what they think of the marchers and their cause. Cancelling the march this weekend would show they care about anti-Semitism. And although I can't necessarily track every dot and comma of the logic behind that position, it feels right to me. Gary's in Finchley. How does it look to you, Gary?
I think that actually is spot on. I think if it goes... First of all, I have the reason I called is because I don't think there's any problem with it going ahead at all. I think it's Palestine Action, which is support for which I think is illegal, and it's a criminal act to support Palestine Action.
And it is likely that it would be the scene of the largest mass arrests in British history at a time when officers are needed for deployment elsewhere, most obviously synagogues, also mosques, so that there are logistical as well as sort of principal reasons for this conversation.
I understand that, but that's the police's job. I'm not saying, I mean, the police don't sort of get shortchanged every time there's a march, and I don't think it should be the case if people want a march. I think the question would be, what are they going to march? And you had a caller who said they're going to have a silent kind of march. People could march with Free Palestine, and on the other side of their sign, they could be saying, don't kill British Jews. I mean, there are ways in which people could theoretically express themselves that are not as divisive as we're envisaging. But also, I do think it's relatively small. The tragedy that happened yesterday, the terrorist attack, is a very small, horrendous thing happening on what we all know is a much bigger scale, because everyone is accusing everyone else of either being anti-Semitic or Islamophobic.
We're managing to avoid that. We're avoiding that here today, for good or for ill, but we will continue to do so.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things is to avoid the words. The words themselves, I think you tried to defy it. You said, like Chief Rabbi said, Jew hate, other people are saying anti-Semitism. Mm. The actual definitions are incredibly harmful, because no one has ever admitted to being anti-Semitic that I know of. No one's ever said, oh, yes, that's me. So if there's no anti-Semites around, then we've got no trouble. And I think that we have got real issues with these words, because no one admits to being Islamophobic, and yet, there obviously are people in...
Well, some people do. Or rather, they claim that the word shouldn't even exist, or it shouldn't be introduced into... It shouldn't be allowed into public discourse, which you don't generally see happening in plain light with anti-Semitism.
You would with me. I don't think the word is at all useful. Jew hate does it, and I know what people who hate Jews are.
Yes.
And if people are prejudiced against Jews, then that's entirely different from Jew hate. And I think that that's the thing, that we are using, and everyone who's using the word anti-Semitism, it's different in different people's heads. I know you don't want to get into it, James, but I do think it's...
I don't necessarily. Why do you think that?
Well, because I think you just said that you're trying to avoid the conflation between...
The accusation. I don't think the kind of people that are calling me are not likely to start accusing others of those things today. Maybe we'll be in a slightly different place on Monday. But I think what you say is fascinating. I think, if I've understood you correctly, you're reminding us that a phrase like anti-Semitism is too big to reflect the different levels of... or the journey from prejudice to murderous intent, perhaps, and things that can be picked up in a schoolyard, thinking back to Bradley's son, and then things that can happen in Manchester yesterday. To have the same phrase to describe all of that is probably unhelpful.
Well, James, I have tried for probably 3 or 4 years within and outside the Jewish community to make exactly that point.
Gosh.
And I have failed because no one wants to hear it.
Yes.
And that's in my community as well. That's in the Jewish community. No one wants to address and it's very painful to be within the Jewish community and hear the IHRA definition, which is the accepted definition by the government of it being a certain perception of Jews. Which may lead to Jew hate. I mean, a certain perception is just a terrible phrase for a formal definition of anti-Semitism. And so, it's just, It's
why does it matter?
We're all using it in the wrong sense.
So you want me to start saying Jew hate more than I say
anti-Semitism? I want you to start saying Jew hate.
Yeah,
and I want the chief rabbi to stick to saying Jew hate. And if someone says, you know what, I don't happen to like that Jewish guy who, you know, whether it's a Jewish guy in England, doesn't have to be Netanyahu. Mm. It could be the chief rabbi. I don't happen to like what he's saying. Doesn't mean you hate him. You can say, I don't like an Orthodox Jew. That's okay.
And I mean, that's gone even further than the more obvious point that you can say, I don't like what they're doing in Gaza, and to somehow claim that that is evidence that you hate Jews is, I mean, under your analysis, it's not just absurd, it's actually unbelievable that it's become so commonplace.
Well, it has, and it is unbelievable. And I would say, just taking that point a little bit further,
go on.
Based on what has happened over the past few days, there has been a peace process that has been proposed by Trump and Netanyahu, who I don't agree with, which has the support of major Muslim countries, Turkey, Pakistan, Indonesia, Egypt, countries.
Yes.
I don't know why people aren't saying, please, for goodness sakes, get this peace process over the line and stop the killing. That's what I would love to see in this country, because, you know, then after that, you can then go after Netanyahu if he's a war criminal or whatever.
Yeah.
But let's get the peace process going.
Well, to be fair, that's precisely the platform that we did on this program earlier in the week. But you were probably busy, so I mean, it's not a position that's gone completely unarticulated.
I was preparing for Yom Kippur.
Well, there you go. That counts.
James, let's also take the word tolerance.
Yes.
I mean, since we're talking about anti-Semitism, the definition of words, tolerance is being used as though it means we're all equal, right? Mm. So tolerance is like Christianity is fine with Judaism and Judaism is fine with Islam. We're all tolerant. We're all equal. But in fact, what tolerance means, if you're tolerated, it means that one group, which is in the ascendant, puts up with another group. And the Jews of this country are quite happy to be tolerated. We are very happy to be tolerated. It means that we can do what we want and we're not ridiculed for it. We're not put down for it. We're not attacked for it. Toleration is, that's how I see toleration. And I think that a Christian approach to this would say that the Christian, the new archbishop should be saying, guys, go to church this Sunday. If you want to help out, go to church and pray for those people who died. And the imam should be saying the same. And we should be saying the same about the Palestinians who are being killed in Gaza.
I mean, why is it that all the sensible people are ringing me today, I wonder? It's an honour and a privilege to listen to you. Can I ask you a slightly trickier question? Why do you think you have failed, in your own words, to convince your friends and your family, your fellow Jews in this country, that anti-Semitism is and has become too broad a brush and dangerously over-applied?
I'm going to get into trouble, James. The reason is because behind closed doors, as you, I'm sure, know, behind closed doors, all sorts of things get done and said.
I don't want you to say anything that you might regret.
No. I just say that the Jewish community, like others, wants to keep its, you know, has its approach, and then that's how it wants to project itself into the outside world. And I would say the same goes for many other communities which are represented by their bodies, and the people of this country are not being, that they're in, not properly represented by the organizations that supposedly are meant to represent them.
I hear that a lot from all sorts of people from all sorts of backgrounds. And finally, I mean, this is a quote from Benjamin Netanyahu. When they're chanting Free Palestine, they're really saying destroy Israel, destroy the Jews. It's the modern equivalent of Hail Hitler. I think that was to the United Nations last week. That, in many ways, is the apotheosis, I think, of what we've been talking about.
Exactly. It's another example. I mean, I would say that you had a very interesting caller on earlier who said that she wasn't anti-Semitic, but then went and I think disagreed with you by saying that she didn't believe any more in the existence of the state of Israel.
Yeah, she was Jewish, just for the record.
As a Jewish state.
Yeah. Right. She was also Jewish. That was Judith, indeed.
Yes. So I get, and I think that there is if you want to go to the core of the matter, the absolute, absolute, absolute core of the matter,
yes,
then that is the conversation you need to have. Should there be a Jewish state because of other religions? that might put it down, and then you go, okay, if there should be a Jewish state of refuge, where do we go from here? Because one final point, James, and I know I'm taking up your time.
No, I'm fascinated by everything you're saying.
If there was a Jewish state in If there was a Jewish state in 1942,
yes,
the Holocaust would not have happened. Go back to that. That is the only, that's the argument for a Jewish state. If you can agree with that argument, then it's all about borders and
geography.
How do you manage it? Because it's about borders and geography and how do you make it work. But with a Jewish state in 1942 or 1940, the Holocaust would never have happened. And that's the thing. You stop the argument there. That is the only thing.
Because nobody could argue that there shouldn't be a Jewish state, and then you perhaps start having a conversation about whether.
Then you have a conversation about how do you make it fair? How do you make it fair for all?
How do you make it safe?
Right. Yes.
Do you feel better? I feel much better having spoken to you.
I feel a lot better, James, for having spoken to you. I really do. And hopefully for your listeners to hear this and respond. I'm going to go and have my finger looked at in a hospital. Bye-bye.
Well, good luck. that quote from Benjamin Netanyahu, I think, was from May 2025. Gary, bringing the Holocaust into the conversation, completely coincidentally, it was at the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. That is free speech in action, isn't it? Which we've managed on this programme, as many people are sort of calling for it to be curtailed or ceased. But here's a line, just to throw a cat among the pigeons. And it is it's a thought-provoking one. Many people were planning to protest tomorrow in support of Palestine Action, which is a proscribed group. We've had lots and lots of phone-ins, and you can find them on the LBC app about whether or not it should be. My view is that they've made a mistake there and created a bigger problem than the one they were trying to solve, but it's not a definitive position by any stretch of the imagination. And the Home Secretary is now telling those people that they shouldn't mount their protest tomorrow. And most of us have taken the view today that she is right, and there are nuances of that view, but that and variations on what should happen instead, which veer from nothing through to a very different sort of protest, silent, for example. And yet this, I'm going to leave you with until we come back in a moment, again, may give you pause for thought. Letting a terrorist disrupt normal life is showing that their methods win. So if you're anything like me, just when you thought you'd got your mind made up, along comes somebody to, as I say, perhaps give you at the very least cause for pause.
This is LBC.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
It's great up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get 2 Sun Super Day stickers to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
We had our smart meter installed a year ago, and it's made things so much easier. Not having to submit meter readings or having to deal with estimated bills is great.
A smart meter sends meter readings direct to your energy supplier. It means you get accurate bills, not estimated bills, and you don't even need an internet connection. Call your energy supplier to request a smart meter today.
Real testimonials voiced by actors. Eligibility may vary.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays. Make money work for you.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It is 11:49 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. A statement has been released by the family of Jihad al-Shami, the man police believe is responsible for yesterday's attack, but I suppose I have to add, not, it has emerged this morning, necessarily responsible directly for the for both of the deaths that have been recorded. The news, this is from his father, he's posted it on Facebook. The news from Manchester regarding the terrorist attack targeting a Jewish synagogue has been a profound shock to us. The al-Shami family in the UK and abroad strongly condemns this heinous act, which targeted peaceful, innocent civilians. We fully distance ourselves from this attack and express our deep shock and sorrow over what has happened. Our hearts and thoughts are with the victims and their families, and we pray for their strength and comfort. We kindly request that all media outlets respect the family's privacy during this very difficult time and refrain from using this tragic event in any context that does not reflect the truth. May God have mercy on the innocent victims, and we pray for the swift recovery of the injured. A reminder of the emotional environment in which this is all unfolding, and it is into that emotional environment that that supporters of Palestine Action, or perhaps more accurately, opponents of the prohibition of Palestine Action, will march tomorrow. Not literally, it's a protest as opposed to a march, but the Home Secretary has called for that not to happen. And I want to know what you think. That's where we started at 10 o'clock today, but goodness me, we've gone off in some unexpected and enlightening directions, haven't we? I thank you for that. It's been an extraordinary privilege so far. I'm going to jinx it now, aren't I? It's been to conduct this conversation against the backdrop of what we are witnessing and what we saw in Manchester yesterday. A lot of love coming in for Gary in Finchley, who unfortunately, unless he's got us on in the car, is probably now not in a position to hear it, given that he was on his way to hospital to have his finger examined. So we're still looking at the protests. And, you know, a couple of you have pointed out the Home Secretary is effectively calling for a protest against the Home Secretary to be called off. And you may need to pause for a moment to think about what that means. Because you can be a supporter of the people of Palestine very, very easily without being a supporter of Palestine Action, which is a group that has undertaken attacks on infrastructure, military infrastructure in this country. So you may lie awake at night, every night, despairing over the deaths in Gaza, but you would never sanction an attack upon a British military installation, for example, in which case you are not part of tomorrow's caucus necessarily. I talk about blurs and distinctions and conflations and confusions, but here's another one for you. I think a lot of people involved in protests like the ones planned for tomorrow think that they're protesting in support of the Palestinian people as opposed to the people who are facing charges for attacking infrastructure in this country, for damaging infrastructure, sabotaging infrastructure in this country. Some people would be happy to do both, but not everybody. But it is the proscription of Palestine Action that is being protested against. Crucially, it is the decision to denote them as a terrorist operation, which renders membership a criminal act, which is why so many people could end up getting arrested tomorrow if it goes ahead. And that decision was taken by a Home Secretary, not this Home Secretary, the last Home Secretary, which was Yvette Cooper. So what they're actually protesting against is a decision taken by a Home Secretary, and it is a Home Secretary who's calling on them not to protest. But it still feels right to me, because, and it's not a word I would often include in any of my pontifications about political or geopolitical issues, but because of the mood. Yvonne is in Manchester. Yvonne, what would you like to say?
I'd just like to say that I don't think we should link any kind of pro-Palestine protest with the tragedy that happened in Manchester yesterday. Mm. I agree with Zach Polanski, what he said on the matter.
Oh, yeah.
And to be honest, one of the few kind of politicians or, you know, who's actually spoken sense on this matter and happens to be Jewish himself and actually happens to be from Manchester originally. So he's sort of almost closer, more closely connected than some of the others who
yes.
made very divisive comments.
What's he said? Just give me your précis of what he said.
The fact that they're just two separate issues, I think it's really important to distinguish between the two. Just like it's really important to distinguish between being anti-Zionist or anti, you know, what Israel is doing in Benjamin Netanyahu and, you know, the idea of hating Jews or being anti-Semitic. And I think your last caller, Gary, also made a lot of good points on this issue. And even what you just said about the fact that, you know, you kind of let the terrorists win if you're just going to stop.
It wasn't me. It was a message from Emma.
It's been planned for a while, hasn't it? The demonstration.
Emma. Yes, and actually, I should have. I need to double check that the protest yesterday had been planned for a while as well. I think
it had. Well, not for that long, but obviously, it was a reaction to what happened with the
flotilla, not what happened in the synagogue in Middleton.
Exactly. Yeah, I should have made that clearer. Had been planned before that.
Yes.
Some of the other protests that were supposed to go on yesterday were cancelled before any politician or high-profile journalist suggested that people do that, because obviously I'm in Manchester, so I know in Manchester we have some stalls and vigils and smaller protests going on a lot of the time, and there were certain people that said, let's just postpone this one for today because of what's happened. And others are now saying that maybe with the smaller vigils, we should keep it silent in respect. So people are sort of thinking about this, but to suggest that they shouldn't go ahead and it's somehow disrespectful to protest against a genocide suggests that by protesting against a genocide, you're expressing some kind of hatred or disrespect towards Jewish people, when there's so many Jewish people that are also against this genocide. I think that's another thing as well that's worth noting, is that we don't distinguish between the right wing and the left wing of the Jewish community. You know, people have political views, you know, within any kind of community. So this idea that Jewish people are all one big block that have the same view,
it's clearly
awful.
Untrue. Are you Jewish, Yvonne?
Anti-Semitic. Yeah, I am.
Right.
Yeah.
I just wanted to establish
my identity isn't maybe as strong as some other people.
Sure.
You know, I don't have family in Israel because I just don't, because, you know, my family were in Britain, you know, different kind of history and stuff. And, you know, I wasn't brought up to support Israel because my family are very left-wing. So even going back generations, my family have sympathised with Palestine.
So you're often...
So obviously I'm in a different position than a lot of other Jewish people I know who actually are in sort of disagreement with their parents over issues, over political issues.
People, it's probably worth rewinding live radio to listen again to what Gary had to say, because I would have to accuse you of Jew hatred, wouldn't I? I'd have to accuse you of Jew hatred under his reading, and that would and that would clearly be ridiculous because you are Jewish. But if we say anti-Semitism, it creates a very different sort of.
Because I'm using that word.
No, just because of where you stand on the Palestinian situation. You've got Benjamin Netanyahu.
I'm against a genocide.
Yes, it would be ridiculous to call you a Jew hater. Absolutely, and it would be ridiculous to call you anti-Semitic. And that's the point that's the point that Gary, I thought, made more powerfully than I've ever heard anybody else make it. And you're right about Zach Polanski. It's a fascinating position that he adopts, actually.
Unfortunately, Nick Ferrari doesn't. colleague.
Maybe
you don't want to go into that.
Well, I don't not want to go into it. You probably know more about it than I do, so it would be a very unbalanced conversation. But I'm interested in what Zach Polanski has to say, which you've introduced me to. We need to be clear what this government is doing. And this is a Jewish man from Salford. They are selling arms to Israel. They're sharing intelligence for an ongoing genocide. So I'm less concerned about the policing of language and civility. And I'm more concerned about the actual bombs that are landing on people. And now addressing the question of protest directly, speaking as a member of the Jewish community, I wouldn't want anyone to feel like they had to be silent about a genocide that is happening because of an outrageous, atrocious attack that happened on our soil too. These are separate things and we should condemn them all. I disagree with you both a bit. I do think that the timing matters. I don't think it would be unreasonable to say, all right, we won't have our protest tomorrow, but we'll be back in numbers next week.
But I just think by saying that, it suggests that it's somehow disrespectful towards Jewish people to protest, you know, against the genocide and against...
Well, it's not...
I mean, obviously, we've seen a real terrorist act, haven't we, yesterday?
Yes.
You know, generally, when you think about terrorism, that's what you think about, don't you? Someone indiscriminately killing members of the public, innocent members of the public, due to some form of hatred, whatever it may be.
Yes.
But with Palestine Action, that's what makes it so odd, and that's why there's so much support for them. It's because they've been labelled as the same when they're clearly... very, very different, where they've actually been actively trying to stop people, innocent people, from being killed, because we've seen, you know, thousands and thousands of people in Gaza, you know, mostly women and children, being killed, and obviously everything else that's gone with it, you know, the fact that they're being starved, the fact that they're hospitals, you know, all the rest of the stuff that's been happening for almost 2 years. And they've been trying to stop that by targeting Elbit systems. You know, that's mainly what they've been doing. That's primarily what they've been doing, which obviously is an arms company.
Which is criminal
and
damage.
And now they're labelled as terrorists. Yes. I mean, this is the problem. And the other issue I just wanted to raise was what's concerning of
how the
far right are going to weaponise this situation further.
Well, I don't know whether it qualifies as far right or not these days, but
Daily
Mail's already trying.
Like,
no, I know what you're saying. Let me read you this from the front of the Daily Mail. From woke police chiefs to left-wing politicians, the list of the killers' enablers is legion. They should have blood on their consciences. My colleagues, John Sopel and Emily Maitlis, yesterday pointed out that, and David Yellen, the former editor of The Sun of all places, on their news agents podcast, pointed out that people on the right of the UK media, how far a right, I suppose, is a matter of opinion, would seek to use this to pour terrible amounts, hideous amounts of oil upon already burning flames. And there it is, front page of the best-selling newspaper in the country. So if you thought Yvonne was exaggerating, or indeed if you thought John Sopel and Emily Maitlis were exaggerating yesterday, and David Yellen, the former editor of The Sun, then I'm afraid the proof of that particular pudding is on your newsstands as we speak. Yvonne, take care. It's 12:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, one of the men who died in the Manchester synagogue attack may have been killed by police gunfire. Adrian Dolby and Melvin Kravitz died after the attacker, Jihad Al-Shami, drove into a group of people before stabbing a man. He was then shot dead by armed officers. LBC's Liam Gotting has been reading a statement from Greater Manchester Police.
The Home Office pathologist has advised that he has provisionally determined that one of the deceased victims would appear to have suffered a wound consistent with a gunshot injury. It is currently believed that the suspect, Jihad Al-Shami, was not in possession of a firearm and that the only shots fired were from GMP's authorised firearms officers as they worked to prevent the offender from entering the synagogue and causing further harm to our Jewish community. It follows, therefore, that subject to further forensic examination, this injury may sadly have been sustained as a tragic and unforeseen consequence of the urgently required action taken by my officers to bring this vicious attack to an end.
Police say another person is in hospital after suffering a gunshot wound, but their condition is not life-threatening. Keir Starmer's visiting the scene of yesterday's attack in Crumpsall. A multi-faith vigil has been taking place in a church nearby.
My daughter's friend's dad is injured. He was
injured in the synagogue yesterday. And, like, it's just too close to home. I can't process it.
Elsewhere, the Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood has criticised activists who held pro-Palestine protests last night. Around 40 people were arrested after clashes with police in Westminster.
What I would say to people who are thinking about going on a protest today or over the weekend is to just take a step back and just imagine how you would feel if it was your father that had been murdered, if your community had come under attack. Just because we have freedoms in this country doesn't mean to say we have to use them at every moment.
The protest group Defend Our Juries has rejected a call by the Metropolitan Police to cancel a protest tomorrow. Demonstrators are due to gather in central London to oppose the prescription of Palestine Action. Scotland Yard says every available officer is needed to protect Jewish communities across London. The King has congratulated Dame Sarah Mullally on her appointment as the new Archbishop of Canterbury. The former chief nursing officer will be the first woman to lead the Church of England. Weather warnings for Storm Amy have been extended across the whole of the UK tomorrow. Dozens of schools in Northern Ireland are closing at lunchtime because of the strong winds. And Dame Patricia Routledge, best known for her role as Hyacinth Bouquet in Keeping Up Appearances, has died. The actress, who also had an extensive theatre career, was 96. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 94.89. That is up 61. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather this afternoon, Storm Amy bringing strong winds and heavy rain to many parts of the UK. Gales developing more widely across the north, a high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 5 minutes after 12. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I think it would feel odd to steer our conversation anywhere else this morning, anywhere away from events in Manchester yesterday and indeed their aftermath, although I have got a very interesting guest coming in before the end of the programme who I'll tell you a little more about shortly. And it is to Manchester that we return now. Chris Chambers, our correspondent there, is in Crumpsall with a little more on this extraordinary development regarding the discharge of the firearms yesterday, Chris.
That's right, James. What we've heard from Greater Manchester Police today is that it appears their firearms officers may well have inadvertently shot dead one of the victims while trying to deal with the attacker, Jihad Al-Shami, and that they may also have shot one of the injured victims as well. They've released a statement today which says the Home Office pathologist has said one of the deceased victims would appear to have suffered a wound consistent with a gunshot injury. It's commonly believed that the suspect, Jihad Al-Shami, was not in possession of a firearm, and the only shots fired were from GMP's authorised firearms officers as they worked to prevent the offender from entering the synagogue and causing further harm. It goes on to say that it follows, therefore, that subject to further forensic examination, this injury may sadly have been sustained as a tragic and unforeseen consequence of the urgently required action taken by officers. And then they go on to say it's understood one of the injured victims may also have been shot, and they said we have also been advised by medical professionals that one of the victims currently receiving treatment has suffered a gunshot wound, which is mercifully not life-threatening. So a significant development in that respect, and we understand they have referred themselves now to the IOPC, which is standard in these kind of situations. But obviously things still developing here. There's lots of questions that will still be needed to be answered. We know Sir Keir Starmer has been to the scene this morning, a very low-key visit at around 10:15. He came through the cordon, walked up to the synagogue and returned a few minutes later and then went off. But Obviously a very difficult time for the locals here. The attacker's family as well have posted a statement on Facebook today saying the Al-Shami family in the UK and abroad strongly condemn this heinous act which targeted peaceful, innocent civilians. And they say they fully distance themselves from the attack and express deep shock and sorrow over what's happened. We've been talking to people all morning. We've spoken to a chap called Omri Simon who was due to be at the synagogue. He got a panic
phone call. As Yom Kippur ended, which was about 8 o'clock in the evening, let's say, we were then scouring through media footage to check who was alive and who wasn't, because we'd been texting people, but if they don't respond, you don't know. So we're saying, that person's there on the TV after the event, so they're alive. That person's there on the TV after they're alive. Okay, so try and see if you can spot this person that would have been there at the synagogue at this time, see if they're alive. And thankfully, a lot of people made it out, but some of our, a friend of ours has died, a friend that my mum has known for the last 50 years basically has died. So, I mean, not everybody made it out. Not everybody has survived this horrible attack.
Omri Simon, who was meant to be at the synagogue, but got a panic phone call telling him not to go because of what was happening. And, you know, yeah, he's mentioned there that one of his family friends died. That was Melvin Kravitz, who was one of the victims of that attack. Vigils have been taking place across Manchester, James. There was that one this morning with people from all faiths getting together just to light candles and just to be together and show solidarity. And at the cordons where we've been all morning, you know, the flowers pinned to the railings of the park, lots of messages of support for this community. But there will, of course, be lots more questions.
Chris, thank you. Chris Chambers there with the very latest from the scene of yesterday's atrocity in Manchester and the extraordinary development today. And I think Andy Hughes is a much tougher cookie than I am, who first brought us details of this statement from the chief constable, and you could hear him struggling with it. Even as he acknowledged that, you know, proper journalists like him, not gobs on sticks like me, are not supposed to allow emotion into any conversation. But the revelation or the news that one of the men killed, and we don't know which, Adrian Dalby or Melvin Kravitz, appears to have been killed by the police who were seeking to stop the terrorist from getting into the synagogue is just an unbearable. An unbearable dimension to an already close to to an already unbearable situation. And of course, such is the nature of policing in this country, it is done by consent, that they will now go over every aspect of that moment with a fine tooth comb, with the finest imaginable tooth comb. It is usually the killing of a criminal that sees those engines start turning, and some people are uncomfortable with that, the idea that police can end up on a charge or even in a dock or in a cell after killing criminals in the course of their duty. That's not a conversation for today, but we do know that process is incredibly comprehensive and incredibly far-reaching, and it will now be moving at pace into the space that is not occupied by a criminal but is occupied by an incredibly brave man who was... He already knew he was risking his life. He just didn't know where the threat was coming from when he elected to try to stop that terrorist from getting into that synagogue. It's unbearable, that. I don't know why. Some details are weird, aren't they? You know that you can sometimes contemplate huge stories and not be moved in the same way that you sometimes are by a detail in a smaller story. But there's something about that particular development that is heartbreaking. And talking of stories and the amount of attention that they get. This is important from Laura. James, right now, the rest of Europe, all news outlets are talking about the flotilla and how Israel has arrested 473 people to stop aid getting through to Gaza. Italy has declared a general strike and the whole country is paralyzed in protest. So, this in response to the question about whether or not tomorrow's protest should even go ahead, it is important for people to keep protesting, because cancelling means saying, yes, our marches and our protests are against Jewish people when they are categorically and obviously not. 12 after 12 is the time. And yet, for me, it's just about the moment still of sympathy and respect. Phone lines are open. Malik is in Leicester. Malik, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Before I start answering your question, I'm going to say two statements. Number one, killing an innocent person is if you have killed the whole of humanity, and saving an innocent life as if you saved the whole of humanity. That's my first statement. Oh, sure. The second statement is, your Lord has created you in different tribes and nations so that you know each other, work with each other, rather than despise each other. Being Jew is not a crime. Being Muslim is not a crime. So these are my statements. Now, with coming to your answer, it is wise that responsibles for tomorrow's protest or march, whatever you want to call it, should show a restraint and not go ahead with it based on the event yesterday. As I understand it, the Home Secretary has the power to cancel it, and she should utilize these powers because these are special circumstances, because this would be highlighted in a very negative way and would not help or serve the cause for these people, the very cause they are aiming to achieve. It's not going to help them. So it's better to postpone it, to cancel it. That's my answer.
What about Laura's point that if you do that, then it allows the conflation of Palestinian-related protests with either anti-Semitism, Jew hatred, or yesterday's act of terror to expand? It adds to the suggestion that there's a relationship, a causal relationship between all of it.
No. Some people may consider that. However, it's showing a sign of respect to a community who suffered a loss. That's my point of view. And they can do this protest next week or a week after. That's not the big deal. The protests or marches have been going on.
Are we sure? Because I agree with you. I think just take a day off. And I don't mean that to sound glib or dismissive or unkind. And the people responding are saying, well, they're not going to be taking a day off from the killing in Gaza. And that is also true. But we don't have any control over that. And we don't actually have any real control over this, but our opinions feel like they matter a bit more. And we know the Home Secretary's opinion, and we know the opinion of some people who've been on marches and protests themselves. In one of my caller's cases, 26 separate occasions, but who finds the idea of any gathering tomorrow to be unconscionable. What about doing everything silently, or conducting as Judith in Didsbury is going to be doing with her our friends and colleagues tomorrow? Just what about having a very different kind of protest? The problem there, of course, is that with the specific example of what's planned for tomorrow, simply by demonstrate holding up a placard and staying silent, saying that you support Palestine action, opens you up to a very real possibility of arrest. But would go on.
If you are living in this country as a citizen of this country, you not only have a legal responsibility, you have a moral responsibility. Think of it from that point of view. You have a moral responsibility, you have an ethical responsibility. These Yes. marches have been going on for the past 2 years. So postponing them for a week or two would not make a major difference, is it?
No, I do agree with you, but I can see why some people worry that it adds to, and I think Gary and Finchley crystallized this part of the conversation almost perfectly, it adds to fears and very deliberate attempts, let's not be under any illusion about that, to ally or equate any criticism of what is happening in Gaza with Jew hatred. You call it Jew hatred, and it becomes ridiculous. Of course it does. Call it anti-Semitism, and it becomes slightly more plausible, even though it's equally absurd. I hate the killing in Gaza. Oh, well, that means you hate Jews. Pardon? And that's obviously ridiculous. And yet, before the details of yesterday's killings had even been established, you had people claiming that marching in solidarity with the people of Palestine somehow allied you with or put you on the hook for the events of what happened in Crumpsall Road. It is extraordinary. And there it is. I think that Malik's got that right, hasn't he? It's just one day. And it's compassion. It's empathy. If you can't show that to others, then how can you ever expect anybody to show it to you? It's 12:17.
LBC.
You are a leaf drifting along on a warm evening breeze. The other leaves, like Giuseppe or Carol from work, look at you and think, Mamma mia, I wish I was that guy. As the sun dips into the horizon, you settle upon the surface of a sparkling mountain stream. A fluffy hotel towel shaped like a swan drifts past, followed by an actual swan. And that is what drinking water filtered by Laika is Laika. Ciao to the good stuff. Arrivederci to the rest.
You know what I love about Eurostar? I can change my ticket up to an hour before departure. I was supposed to get the 6 a.m. train, but when I got home at 3 a.m., I thought, hey, what's the rush? So I switched it to 2 p.m., and now I'm traveling fresh as a daisy.
Drink, monsieur?
Coffee, please.
Eurostar. Together, we go further. Changes limited to date and time. Pay ticket price difference subject to availability. Policy varies by class of travel. See Eurostar.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 12:19. A couple of people wondering why earlier callers have brought Nigel Farage into the conversation. And, well, I suppose it's my job to tell you, isn't it? Or to at least remind you, albeit that the rest of my profession seems to have developed collective amnesia about this kind of stuff, even though it happened in this building. Here's a little report for you from November of 2017 in the American magazine Newsweek, from the top. Trump ally and Brexit leader Nigel Farage says there's something Americans should worry about more than Russian meddling, Jews. Farage, in a Monday interview, singled out the so-called Jewish lobby as an overwhelming power in America during a discussion about Russia's interference in US politics. There are other very powerful lobbies in the United States of America, and the Jewish lobby, with its links with the Israeli government, is one of those strong voices, Farage said on his London-based radio show. He turned the conversation to Jewish lobbies after a caller had suggested the pro-Israel lobby was as dangerous to the US as the Kremlin. That's a reasonable point, Farage told the caller. Because there are days when I wonder whether I'm the only one paying attention to this stuff, but there it is. I'm definitely not the only one paying attention to the horrible case of Paloma Shemarani, who you will remember died after refusing treatment for her cancer. And we spoke to her twin, Gabriel, earlier this year about his conviction that his mother, Kate, was responsible for that decision. The inquest has now concluded, and Gabriel will be joining me just after 12:30 to respond to the coroner's findings. I'm sure that you'll want to join me in listening to what he has to say about an experience that is, again, we're using the word a lot at the moment. It's almost inconceivable that could happen, but it did. Back to the events of yesterday, and indeed the possible events of tomorrow. The Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, has released a statement about planned protests in London. I shall read it to you in its entirety. Sadiq has always said that protest is a fundamental cornerstone of democracy, but must be peaceful, lawful and safe. He urges those considering protesting tomorrow to be mindful of the appalling terror attack this week, which has devastated our frightened Jewish communities. We all have a responsibility to consider how our words and actions make others feel. As Londoners living side by side with each other, we must always be cognizant about how our actions affect others and seek to support those from other communities. Now more than ever, we need to stand together and show the terrorists who seek to divide us that they will never win. So the mayor, I think it's fair to say, declining or fudging an opportunity to offer up a very clear and strong view on whether these protests should go ahead. Coming down on the side of supporting protest in principle and urging consideration and decency in practice tomorrow. I'd go a little further, and I'd say, as many of you have said, but by no means all of you, just not tomorrow. Just think for a moment about how frightened some of our friends and neighbours are, and don't do anything tomorrow that may add to their fear, even if it's not a rational response to what they're seeing. That's the point about the tension that we've been talking about all morning between feelings and facts. Lots of people will tell you, Richard in Manchester put it best, in fact, about how sometimes it feels anti-Semitic to witness things. It's very irresponsible of right-wing politicians, of course, to deliberately claim that anybody marching in support of people in Palestine is somehow a supporter of Hamas, let alone the monster responsible for yesterday's atrocity. But the often very frenzied vocal support for and opposition to what is happening in Gaza and the support for the people there, I just don't think it's too big an ask to say, let's not do it tomorrow. But I am falling into a trap that I often castigate you for falling into, and it's a trap that prioritises feelings over facts. Samantha is in Elstree. Samantha, what would you like to say?
Hi. I just want to start by saying that I don't agree with most of the things that you say, but I was so thankful to hear you say your views that the protest shouldn't go ahead tomorrow. I'm a Jewish mum, and what happened really rocked me to my very core.
Yes,
my son goes to a Jewish school. He has armed police outside there right now. And for me personally, I would have no problem with the protest going ahead tomorrow if we hadn't seen hundreds and hundreds of examples of people, and they may be the minority, being anti-Semitic, deeply anti-Semitic on these marches. And when I am in London and I see a march and I hear things globalise the Intifada, that is exactly what happened on Yom Kippur. That's what globalise the Intifada means. When we hear...
Well, you know, that's very enthusiastically disputed. And it won't be a phrase that many people listening to this have come across. But it is not a phrase that, by any stretch of the imagination, conjures up or encourages terrorism. It's a phrase that pro-Palestinian activists use to call for the internationalization of resistance to Israeli occupation.
It means an uprising.
You can choose to interpret it as a call for violence and attacks against Israelis, Jews and institutions, but a lot of people using the phrase will be equally adamant that that's not what they're calling for at all.
Okay.
So I'm just establishing that it's a lot more nuanced than you allow.
That's fine, but we can go back as far as 2021 when people drove down Finchley Road with Palestinian flags shouting, F the Jews, rape their daughters. That's pretty self-explanatory. So what I'm saying is that not
everyone...
But now
you put me in a position where I have to remind you that 53 people got killed in Gaza yesterday, and there's 60,000 dead in total, and a lot of the people on the other side of this argument to you don't see why the actions of the minority that you describe should ever be used to denigrate or define their position and their opposition to the, well, much wiser heads than either you or me have concluded is a genocide.
I think if we're going back to the topic, which was should the protest go ahead tomorrow,
yes.
I'm just going to give you an example. There was hundreds of tweets and posts that I saw yesterday. One of them said, well deserved, these people kill Gaza babies. Right?
Yes, that,
they had a Palestinian flag on them.
That's profoundly anti-Semitic, but that's got nothing to do with what's planned for tomorrow.
No, but in these protests, we see posters all the time with anti-Semitic remarks. When people shout, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
But that phrase appeared in, that phrase has appeared in Likud party documents for decades now.
But we know what that means. It means the eradication of Israel. If you ask people what it means, they'll tell you that's what it means. But we don't want...
So you don't think there should ever be any protest?
We want all of it. We know what that means.
Well, what does it mean when Benjamin Netanyahu uses it as what he wants for Israel? What does it mean when his key allies appear with maps of greater Israel that would...
Right, and so now we're linking the two. We're linking the two.
No, I'm not. You just said you wanted to get back to the topic, and then you jumped off in a completely different operation. So what do you want people to do? Promise that they won't?
Promise they won't be anti-Semitic on a march.
Yeah,
but the Palestinian action protest happened hours after Jews were killed, and someone said, "We don't care about the Jewish community."
And that's disgusting.
Correct. So why are we allowing it to happen?
Because that won't
on
be
Saturday,
that won't
when
be
we're
the,
coming up to
that,
October the 7th, where Jews are traumatized.
That won't, okay. I the greatest of love and respect, I don't think you're interested in having a conversation. I agree with you that tomorrow's protest shouldn't go ahead, but your argument actually fits opposition to all protests and all attempts to demonstrate solidarity with Palestinian people on the grounds that some idiots and scumbags may or will be there. Oddly, the one protest, as far as I'm aware, where this doesn't apply is the Palestinian Action protests, because that is simply a case of holding up a placard that says, I oppose genocide, I support Palestinian Action, and that will get you arrested. Do you have a problem with that placard?
I think many people would oppose genocide, but then I think this also then comes down to an argument.
Do you have
of
a problem with that placard? Because that is, as far as I'm aware, pretty much the only placard that ever appears at Palestine Action protests.
I think this is where we can go into, is it a genocide?
No. Do you have a problem with that placard?
Well, that's not anti-Semitic, no.
So if that is the only placard that appears at tomorrow's protest, you'd be comfortable with it?
I would, but we can't be assured of that.
I still wouldn't. You see, because I just think for reasons that I can't articulate intellectually, it would be more respectful and more compassionate and more helpful to simply say, no, we won't do it tomorrow. But it's interesting that if the protest unfolds as its organisers would want it to, you would end up being in favour of it and I would end up being against it. It's coming out to 12:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Greater Manchester Police says one of the men who died in yesterday's synagogue attack was hit by a bullet fired by armed officers. One of the people being treated in hospital also suffered a non-life-threatening gunshot wound. The terrorist attacker, Jihad al-Shami, did not have a firearm. The two men who died have been named as 53-year-old Adrian Dolby and 66-year-old Melvin Kravitz. The father of the Manchester attacker has released a statement on behalf of his family. Faraj al-Shami says news of the terror attack has been a profound shock to them. He added that his family in the UK and abroad strongly condemn the heinous act and have expressed their deep sorrow for the victims. And Dame Sarah Mullally has been named as the new Archbishop of Canterbury. She's used her first address to say she stands with the Jewish community after yesterday's attack. LBC weather. Storm Amy will bring strong winds and heavy rain to many parts of the UK. Gales will develop in northern areas by the late afternoon with highs of 18 degrees.
This is LBC.
That quiet moment behind the wheel. The perfect space to get your thoughts in order. With the stylish HRV Hybrid, you get the head-turning design you want, with the space and flexibility you actually need. Because every journey matters. Explore the full Honda range online at honda.co.uk. Honda, the power of dreams.
We had our smart meter installed a year ago, and it's made things so much easier. Not having to submit meter readings or having to deal with estimated bills is great.
A smart meter sends meter readings direct to your energy supplier. It means you get accurate bills, not estimated bills, and you don't even need an internet connection. Call your energy supplier to request a smart meter today.
Real testimonials voiced by actors. Eligibility may vary.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe, only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 12:32 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we turn our attention next to a case that you are probably aware of, the horrible story, the heartbreaking story of Paloma Shemarani, who died aged 23 from cancer last year, a cancer from which she was given an 80% chance of recovery. A coroner looking into that death because of Paloma's decision to cease her conventional, to cease her medical treatment, and partly because her brothers, Gabriel and Sebastian, were very much of the view that she did so as a consequence of their mother's intervention. Gabriel, who is Paloma's twin, is with me now. It came in at around 3 p.m. yesterday. What were you hoping for, and what did you get?
So I was hoping for a verdict of unlawful killing, because I think and many others think that my mum fit all the criteria for the unlawful killing of my sister. Regarding what we got, we got a conclusion by the coroner where she played it safe and she didn't want to stick her head above the parapet. So she said that my mum had contributed to my sister's death and that my mum had taken a leading role in my sister rejecting chemotherapy and doing this therapy which eventually killed her. However, she let her off on a technicality and said, while my mum's behaviour and care towards my sister was incomprehensible and egregious, it was not unlawful. And, you know, if I can make reference to some of the statements that the coroner made.
Yes.
It feels like she's essentially, in outlining her reasoning, she's given a handbook to wannabe Kay Shemaranis to say, if you want to try out these treatments on your daughters or your sons, this is how you do it, so that the state can't catch you.
Well, she also said, I have a reputation for being able to start an argument in an empty room, but I'm definitely not going to do that today. But just for the avoidance of doubt, she also said that the influence that was brought to bear on Paloma did contribute more than minimally to her death. Your anger, if that's the right word to use here, is directed at the fact that you're saying you did contribute to my sister's death and you're not going to get into any trouble for it. And that's why you're saying that it might send other parents a message that they could encourage their cancer-stricken relatives to give up chemotherapy and try juices and coffee instead.
Mm. Exactly. And it's and that's the thing that I think is so confusing for everyone. And it's confusing for me even, that the coroner accepted that it influenced and it caused my sister's death, yet she described it as lawful. So it almost feels like the state at this point is saying, you can kill your daughter lawfully, you just have to do it in the right way. And the thing that, so I don't want to get too much into the legal weeds of the judgment, but so there was 5 criteria that my mum needed to meet for there to be a conclusion of gross negligence manslaughter. There had to have been a duty of care that my mum had to my sister. There had to be a breach of that duty of care. And there had to be a risk of death from breaching that duty of care. As well as you also have to show that they also were one of the sole or major causes of that death. So the first 3 criteria, the coroner fully accepted that my mum breached, that she had a duty of care to my sister, that she breached that duty of care, and that there would be a risk of death. However, it's when we got to the 4th point that the coroner kind of let my mum off on this technicality of, well, Kay wasn't the sole cause. There was others. Oh, your dad also influenced your sister. The practitioners that your mum put Paloma in touch with also influenced your sister. So it's almost like she was saying to my mum, you can't kill people individually, but kill as a group. If you get your friends, your lackeys, to also influence your daughter, then we can't go after all of you, so we're not going to go after any of you. So she's essentially let my mum off because my mum acted as a group. She acted as a network. And it's which is all the more dangerous because no man is an island. So, of course, no one is going to be influenced by just one person. And this coroner has essentially said, as long as you act as an organisation and you organise yourselves, we can't point the blame at anyone, so you can run free. So I don't just... I mean, to be honest, I think... There's many aspects to this. I think her judgment is legally unsound. And I've had other coroners message me since the ruling asking if I want assistance for a pro bono assistance to judicially review this ruling. But also, thirdly, I think the law is completely unfit to deal with this kind of thing. The fact that there's this small technicality of you have to prove that this sole person was the majority cause, and this idea that they can get off if it was done by a group of them is frankly outrageous. And it's not just my sister that's in danger now. It's everyone else's sister. I think the thing that I find particularly egregious on the coroner's conduct is, so over the course of the inquest, I found emails that my mum had accidentally CC'd me in years ago, where she was treating other patients with cancer. My mum treats other people with cancer and advises them to not get chemotherapy. And I've had people get in contact to say that their family members have either had negative health events because of this or have died. The coroner knows this, and she still lets Kay walk the streets. It's not just my family member that's in danger now. It's everyone else's. And with this, the coroner's essentially given the green flag to every little Kay Shimarani sitting at home.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry that you're going through this. I got to be honest with you. I saw the conclusions drop yesterday, and I somewhat lazily thought that you would be satisfied, because the conclusion was that your conspiracy theorist mother, I probably should have explained a little bit more at the top of this section, but I wanted to hear your voice as quickly as possible, Gabriel. But your mother is an extremely prominent conspiracy theorist in the anti-vax world that exploded somewhat during lockdown. And the conclusion was that her views influenced your sister's death. I fully understand now that this to you is nowhere near enough.
It's like saying the sky is blue.
Yeah.
She said something that everyone that watched the panorama knows. She said that my mum influenced my sister. Of course she did. Of course the friend of Tommy Robinson who called for doctors and nurses to be hung influenced her vulnerable daughter.
You're describing your mother now.
Yeah. Of course that happened. And, you know, what I thought was so particularly egregious was she accepted that my mum was physically abusive towards my sister. She accepted that my mum delayed calling the ambulance for 5, 6, 7 minutes when my sister had a heart attack. She accepted that my mum could see that my sister was getting sicker and still deliberately didn't contact doctors. And so she accepted all this, but she then says, this is lawful conduct. That, for everyone at home that's listening, I just want them to pause on that and hear that and remind themselves that's lawful conduct. And for every wannabe Kay Shimarani, Rose West, you know, any other conspiracy theory serial killers, I guess I'm saying to them now, kill your children because you can.
Well, obviously she's going to reject that characterization of what has happened, as indeed the coroner has as well. I mean, in terms of context that people may not be aware of, your mother tried to blame medical staff for Paloma's death. She's previously labelled chemotherapy as mustard gas.
Yes.
And this, when you say that the law is not equipped, it's almost a recognition of the speed and the scale with which conspiracy theorists have grabbed the sort of windpipe of the nation in recent years. You mentioned associations with Stephen Yaxley Lennon as well. I don't like this word, mate, but were you optimistic yesterday when the announcement began?
I actually wasn't.
No.
At every point throughout this case, you know, from my sister getting cancer, there's been failures by the state. I didn't say this so much in the panorama because we didn't have the space to, but a lot of this is characterised by a failure by social services. I reported this to social services a year and a half ago, and they never went to interview my sister. I reported this to police, and the police have been useless because they don't take these kind of complex cases seriously.
If your sister had been 12, it would have been very different, I think.
Exactly.
And it's because she's 23 that the sense of agency or autonomy kicks in subconsciously or consciously with the authorities?
Almost, but then even that I feel was a misunderstanding on their part.
Yeah.
Give the coroner her dues. The coroner acknowledged that my sister was incredibly emotionally vulnerable, and she even said in the judgment, if Kay hadn't been present in her life, Paloma likely would have taken chemotherapy and would likely still be alive. And I think it's the coroner at least accepted that my sister was vulnerable and, you know, she wasn't able to exercise her own capacity. And, she was under a controlling influence. And she at least heard that. When I dealt with the social services and I dealt with the police, they didn't even bother to listen to me. And I think it's So I wasn't hoping for much from the state. And if anything, I don't know whether the coroner was fearful that, if she did say that my mum had done something criminal, then I guess that puts the police and the social services in the firing line, because then that's saying that the social services screwed up and they missed something which resulted in a girl dying.
Will you take it further, do you think? Is it too soon to say? You're not giving up, I sense.
Definitely. I'll take it further in two aspects. I think on the personal level, I'm appealing this judgment. My lawyers are confident there's something there. I'm confident there's something there. And, you know, other coroners that have messaged me are confident there's something there. But I think further than this, I think under existing laws, Kay should still be in prison. But I also think these existing laws aren't fit for dealing with this kind of thing. It's crazy that it's taken a year for us to even have this conclusion, have this conversation. You know, we can have hundreds of protesters arrested in one day, yet it takes a year to not arrest one woman for killing her daughter. It's madness. To me, it feels like this government and governments gone by are sleeping at the wheel, and they're putting all of us in danger, and they're not looking at the everyday dangers that people face.
Again, and you know I have to do this, claim or accusation that your mum killed your sister is one that is completely rejected by the coroner and you know by the law as it stands. Very much your obviously passionately held opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Can we end on a slightly different note with your permission?
Of course.
Can you tell me a bit about Paloma? Can you give me a picture of what she was like before she got ill?
She was like me. She was incredibly goofy. I know I'm sounding very angry right now, but this isn't my usual state of being. She was very funny, and she really didn't take herself seriously whatsoever. Obviously, she was very intelligent, but she wasn't one of these ones who would kind of remind you of that when they were speaking to you. If anything, she probably came across as a lot more absent-minded than she actually was, which I guess I do as well sometimes. Hopefully, I'm not coming across absent-minded now.
No, most definitely not.
But, yeah, I mean, it's you know, I think once all is said and done and once the law has changed, once justice has got for my sister, I hope people can remember her, not as a girl that lost her life, but, you know, as a truly special person that she was. You know, the girl that could speak multiple languages and, the beautiful sister that I loved all my life.
When do you miss her most?
It's in the, small weird moments because, you know, having a twin, you're used to them always being there. So you always, when something funny happens, you always tell them or you always message them. So she would find it hilarious that I'm on the radio now or that I've been on the TV. kind of her dorky, uncool twin brother. So it's those kind of moments. I just want to sort of text her or I want to say, so-and-so messaged me, I'm speaking to this person. Or, did you hear about so-and-so cheating on, their sure. girlfriend kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, the weird gossip.
The gossip, the banter.
Is what I miss her most. It's the sort of throughout this whole process, you get used to depersonalizing yourself as, about to listen to stuff that no brother should have to listen to. So you just stop, you stop treating yourself like their brother and you just start treating it as a case that you need to solve. So it's when I get those flashes that I realize I actually have lost a sister. When I realize it is my sister's 999 call that I'm listening to and it is my sister that choked on her tumours. That's when it's the most difficult that I realise it's not someone else's life, it's my life.
And that's why you're not going to let go.
Yeah. I mean, it's exhausting.
Of course it is.
I'm a young man, but it feels like I'm going to be getting quite a few wrinkles over this next year. Because, there's still a lot to be done. And, I wish I could have come on today and it could have been sort of on a celebratory note and I could have reiterated to people that, people are safe, but they're not.
Safe from tidal waves of lies, misinformation and conspiracies that are, tragically, and as Gabriel has reminded all of us so powerfully, are growing, it feels, almost on a daily basis. Gabriel Shemarani, thank you, and good luck.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, Gabriel is the twin brother of Paloma Shemarani, who died last year from cancer aged 23, and a coroner has just found that she was adversely influenced by their mother's conspiracy theory views, which were against Paloma being treated with chemotherapy. But The final finding of the coroner was that she did not have enough evidence to conclude that this amounted to unlawful killing. You honour her memory.
Thank you.
It's 12:47.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
As tragic new detail emerges about yesterday's attack in Manchester, tell me, as a Jewish person in Britain, how your fear has affected your life.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
That quiet moment behind the wheel. The perfect space to get your thoughts in order. With the stylish HRV Hybrid, you get the head-turning design you want with the space and flexibility you actually need. Because every journey matters. Explore the full Honda range online at honda.co.uk. Honda, the power of dreams.
With a gift in your will to UNICEF, you'll know that the job of making a better world for every child is in good hands. It'll be the start of an incredible journey, connecting you with a powerful community of people working tirelessly to protect and nurture children so they're empowered to take on the world. To find out more about leaving a gift in your will that never stops working for children, search UNICEF Legacy for a free guide today.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet, she's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're cruising through Europe's iconic cities along the Danube or enjoying a rainforest tour through Costa Rica. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10:01 is the time, and a lot of love coming in for Gabriel. That's an almost unthinkable ordeal that he has been through and continues to go through. I didn't fully appreciate the strength of his feeling before he came into the studio, because, as I mentioned to him a moment ago, from my reading of the case, it appeared that some of what he sought in that inquest had been achieved, but listening to him explain it so knowledgeably and so powerfully made it absolutely clear, perfectly clear, that that was far from the actual reality. 12:51 is the time. I think we're mostly agreed that it would be just a bit unkind. What's the adjective you'd use? Unkind, inappropriate? Just a little wrong to go ahead with any protests tomorrow, which Jewish people could feel targeted by. Problem there for rationalists and those of us who try to prioritise facts over feelings is that what if there was no attempt to target Jewish people? Samantha in Elstree reminding us that marches often contain people who can't mask their anti-Semitism or their Jew hatred. To take us back to Gary and Finchley's extraordinary powerful contribution to the programme. But I just wonder whether it is that much of an ask, that big an ask, to simply say, let's just not do it tomorrow. clarify a couple of things. The protests that unfolded yesterday were in response to Israel's arrest of the detention of the Global Summit flotilla and the detention of the activists on the boats that were trying to take aid to Gaza. About 450 activists on the boats. They were not, as an earlier caller, or indeed I may have accidentally and erroneously suggested, they were not prompted by the events in Manchester yesterday, but they assumed a very different complexion because of the events in Manchester yesterday. And that, I think, is intrinsic to understanding why the Home Secretary has called for tomorrow's planned protest not to go ahead, with some of the caveats. Some of the caveats that we've covered on the programme today, the biggest of which is you shouldn't let terrorists disrupt normality. And in the absence of this terror attack in Manchester, the protest would be going ahead. So the terrorism is disrupting the normality on this occasion. 12:53 is the time. So it's not, you know, crystal clear. But I think there's a broad consensus among you and me. Josh is in Warrington. Josh, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Nice to speak to you again. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
I think I probably follow that consensus. And I don't think those protests should probably go ahead, at least this week, maybe next week, who knows. But I think the main reason for me is I think both causes have the right to protest peacefully, and I am a two-state solution person. I believe both people should have a humanitarian right to coexist and live peacefully together. I think I'm going to use an analogy from history, and you tell me if this is stretching it beyond the bounds of reason to try and draw the point I'm going to make. But I remember reading during the apartheid in South Africa when Chris Hani was assassinated, and there was a sort of brink of chaos moment, and Mandela could have used that to really fuel and drive the anti-apartheid movement stronger, but he didn't. He called for restraint and a respect in that moment of grief, and he could have gone the other way, but he showed humanity, discipline, and I think it's widely accounted that actually strengthened in the end that fight for freedom. In the same spirit, I granted that the person who was assassinated in my example was on the same side of the person pushing for the thing they wanted. But I think the point I'm trying to draw is that if we can show humanity and respect when they've got every right to still protest, for those who are protesting for the right reasons, I think it would show that actually, aside from the few idiots who turn up to these things holding plaques that have got nothing to do with the actual causes at hand, there is a general humanitarian respect for a grief and accepting the social climate, recognising the temperature of what's going on, and knowing that a brief pause today doesn't show that you're giving up your fight for what you want. It just acknowledges the climate this week and that you're not really giving in. Something along those lines.
That's really nicely put. Really nicely put. I don't have the history, as they say, to sit in judgment on your analogy or to mark it out of 10, but I understand the sentiment behind it, and it chimes rather nicely with a message Beatrice sent to me, which simply says, showing a kindness to others does not deny the worthiness of your own cause. Which is pretty much, you know, what you're saying, and Steve indeed adds, it's about a show of compassion. Don't ask for compassion from your adversary if you can't display it yourself. Although, the conflation there of adversary with protesters and targets of protesters is taking us back to where we started. But I like that. I mean, you may not have a rational or an intellectual or even a statistical basis for doing something, but you just do it because it feels right and it's kind. Thank you for that. I'm going to play that little clip. I don't think we've got time, actually. I think we may have pushed ourselves towards the limits of the programme. So I'm going to do something I never do. And just because a lot of you do get in touch to express care and concern and various other positions on days like today when we find ourselves handling subjects like this, I'm going to read out a couple of nice messages. We made a decision not to read out any of the nasty ones that you can always guarantee will come flooding into the studio on a day like this. So I'll begin with this from Isaac, who writes, "You've handled today's discussions, because I can never do any of this without you. That's the point I really want to make. You've handled today's discussion supremely well. So many excellent contributors. I'm struggling to reach quite as far as the Home Secretary's stance, although I am swayed by the arguments made on your show against demonstrations tomorrow. The argument that we cannot allow terrorism to stop our daily lives is very powerful, though. Should a demonstration against something totally unrelated also not go ahead? I think the answer to that would be no. And therefore, there is an inherent insinuation underlying calls to cancel these protests that makes me uncomfortable, but I cannot pinpoint why. My heart goes out to the Jewish community throughout the country and all those in Manchester affected by this horrific attack. And this from John, who's in Woodbridge. Hi, James. I just felt I had to say that whilst I'm not your greatest admirer and have never had the pleasure of meeting you, nor probably never will, you've conducted the last 3 hours with empathy, knowledge and great skill. Thank you. Well, thank you, John. And as I say, on many occasions, none of us can do any of the things that we do without you. There is rather a good full disclosure available if you're looking for a little bit of a distraction from the heaviness of the news agenda, albeit that I've run out of time to play you a clip, and it features one of my favourite people in public life. I don't think that's going to come as a major surprise to anybody, who is once again taking up a challenge to improve the lives of everybody else in measurable and meaningful ways. I speak of Jamie Oliver, who is my guest on Full Disclosure this week. If you're very, very good, I may play you a clip of that on Monday. But if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player and the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on all the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, pause, rewind live radio, listen to a range of podcasts. James O'Brien Daily is there. Full Disclosure is there. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store. Now, Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4 on LBC. But now, for the first time in living memory, bang on time, it's Sheila Fogarty.
Well done. How about that? Done, young man. Applause. Well done. Yeah, we'll have a drink later to celebrate that one. At three today, if you've been moved to action of any kind over the destruction and suffering in Gaza, and why wouldn't you have been, should any march at this point be in support of the ceasefire deal rather than shouting down Israel to no avail for Gazans on the ground? At two, these protests. The Home Secretary has described the planned protests, and some we've seen in the last day or two, as un-British, urging people to, in her words, show some love to UK Jews. I think that's quite naive. Or deliberately blind, I don't know. Has she seen these protests? There is very little love for Jews in them, and I expect them to go ahead, almost whether she likes it or not. I want to begin, though, with how fearful you have been as a Jewish person in Britain. Tell me about it. How's it changed your life?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Greater Manchester Police say one of the men who died in yesterday's synagogue terror attack was hit by a bullet fired by armed officers. One of the people being treated in hospital also suffered a non-life-threatening gunshot wound. LBC's Liam Gotting has been reading a statement issued by GMP.
It is currently believed that the suspect, Jihad Al-Shami, was not in possession of a firearm and that the only shots fired were from GMP's authorised firearms officers as they worked to prevent the offender from entering the synagogue and causing further harm to our Jewish community. It follows, therefore, that subject to further forensic examination, this injury may sadly have been sustained as a tragic and unforeseen consequence of the urgently required action taken by my officers to bring this vicious attack to an end.
The father of the Manchester attacker has released a statement on behalf of his family. Faraj Al-Shami says news of the terror attack had been a profound shock to them. He added that his family in the UK and abroad strongly condemn the heinous act and have expressed their deep sorrow for the victims. Sir Keir Starmer has been visiting the scene of yesterday's attack this morning. Sir Keir held hands with his wife, Lady Victoria Starmer, as they met police officers. The Prime Minister has also been meeting with a number of other first responders in Manchester.
I wanted to come and see you to be able to say on my own behalf as Prime Minister, but on behalf of the whole country, thank you for your response yesterday. I've been to the scene to pay my respects and to get a sense of what you were confronted with. I've also seen the body-worn cameras and the footage out of that. I am absolutely clear in my mind as to the professionalism of the response, the speed of the response.
The Metropolitan Police has urged organisers to cancel a rally in support of the banned group Palestine Action tomorrow. It says every available officer is needed to ensure the safety of Jewish communities across London. 40 people were arrested at a Gaza demonstration in Westminster last night. One other story this lunchtime, Dame Sarah Mullally has been named as the new Archbishop of Canterbury. She has used her first address to say that she stands with the Jewish community after yesterday's attack. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 51 at 94.78. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather. Storm Amy will bring strong winds and heavy rain to many parts of the UK this afternoon. Gales will develop in northern areas with highs of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
We were a noisy generation, but it might be something quiet would do that becomes our greatest legacy. Leave a gift in your will to the British Heart Foundation and fund groundbreaking research that could help save millions of lives. Search BHF Wills.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. If you're just joining us here at LBC, we're going to continue to talk about, reflect on and update you on the investigation into yesterday's terrorist attack on a synagogue in Manchester. Some new detail is really upsetting on a number of fronts. One of the victims killed in yesterday's attack was hit by police fire, police gunfire, as they shot the attacker. If you've seen any of the pictures, you know that the main doors to the synagogue, which were closed and locked and being barricaded essentially by people inside the synagogue, two individuals on the other side of that door suffered gunshot wounds. It looks as though one of the people who died as a result of those gunshot wounds. Three people remain in hospital, with one also being treated for a non-life-threatening gunshot wound, according to police. The family of Jihad al-Shami, who police believe carried out the attack, have expressed deep shock and sorrow and condemned the heinous act, as they called it. Three other people have been arrested. Police are treating the attack as a terror incident. And when we get new updates from the police, we'll bring them to you here at LBC. The UK's chief rabbi said the attack at the Heaton Park synagogue on Yom Kippur, very important festival in religious holy day rather than festival in Judaism, is the tragic result, he said, of an unrelenting wave of Jew hatred, reflecting something of what I said yesterday with you and talked about with you. And I'm conscious that it was really noticeable yesterday that many of you who were calling were calling for the first time and were Jewish. And of course, Jewish people have called since October the 7th to talk about the situation in Israel and Gaza, but not in the numbers that we had yesterday. And many of you were saying you'd picked up the phone for the first time. You were speaking about it out loud for the first time in any public sense. And the reason you hadn't so far was a sense of shrinking your life a bit in the hope that that tidal wave would eventually wash over us all and things could return to normal. Well, that's not going to happen, is it? And many people who were very outspoken from the Jewish community in this country have been saying for a long time that it wasn't just going to wash over us. It had to be tackled at source. And now those kinds of questions about how we tackle it at source, it being violence and deep antipathy and anti-Semitism towards Jews in this country, how we tackle it is a big question facing the government at the moment. You heard from the Prime Minister in the news bulletin there. But the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, has been speaking about it this morning, urging people not to go on protests, pro-Palestine protests. And I want to talk more about those protests later in the programme, because it's a quandary, really, because clearly many people on those protests are not vile anti-Semites. But I would say, I've said it many times before, if you go along to those protests knowing that in amongst them very prominently in amongst them are anti-Semitic banners, Nazi chants, comparing Israel to the Nazis, knowing how hurtful that is and untrue. Blood libel, so obvious, it's almost comical, but it's not comical. Globalise the Intifada, again, you know what I said about that yesterday, now we know what that looks like in the UK, and the chant of River to the Sea, and I know many of you try to pass it off as meaning something other than get Jews out of the Middle East, but that's what it means, get Jews out of the Middle East. So we'll talk about those protests, and I'm stunned that there was one yesterday, more than one, all over the place. And I'm stunned about the plan for one this weekend in support of Palestine Action. I'm stunned but not surprised, because we saw what happened after October the 7th, when suddenly you would think that the attack had been on 1,200 Palestinian people on October the 7th, not on Israelis and people living in Israel. So there's a murky history to these protests, as well as, I think, some well-meaning people, some naive people on the protests, but I think there's some very poisonous people on those protests as well. So when the Home Secretary asks for people to show some love at this time to Jewish people, again, has she seen those protests? Answer, of course she has. So where she thinks that love is going to come from, I don't know. I want to know this hour, though, from you, as a Jewish person, how has your fear over the last couple of years affected your life? Because that's what came through yesterday. People saying, I've kept my mouth shut. I've kept a low profile. I've hoped all this would pass, this hate, this Jew hate. It hasn't. It's exploded at the synagogue yesterday. And they felt the need to talk. So let's talk. How has that fear and that discomfort with what's going on around you, about you, affected your life? 0345 6060 973. Mark Adelston joins me first, Chair of the Jewish Representative Council of Greater Manchester and Region, a close friend of the Rabbi of Heaton Park Synagogue. Good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining me.
Good afternoon, Sheila.
A very difficult, well, 36 hours now almost, really, certainly 24 plus hours, very difficult time.